So what do you say that Hamp and O'Bee are going to be on today at 4?
We got a season preview show today at 4 o'clock till 6.
It's going to be exciting.
Yeah, we'll have some good things to talk about for a change.
Yeah.
Be nice.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Very nice.
Yeah, we get to see the guys again, too.
And the Hamp and O'Bee pregame show starts next week. Is that right?
That is correct. We'll start at 11 ahead of the season opener. It's at Soldier Field next week against Tennessee. So we'll be on at our regular time at 11 a.m., and that means you get to go home a little bit early, which I know you don't. I know you hate. What you really do is I know you go back to your desk and you listen intently.
I do a pretend show
taking
by
notes,
myself.
Exactly.
Schwani and
he
I
becomes
go back
Dean
there.
Diamond again.
Schwani and I go back there and we do a little pretend show. And I can say what I really think.
Of me and everybody else.
I'm glad I'm on the air and I can't hear it.
Yeah. I look forward to it. It's the most exciting 5 minutes in radio broadcasting.
Nice.
When I'm trying to get out, get all my junk out of here, and they're getting their junk in here.
Right.
Well, themselves, really.
Yeah.
That's
it's the shift change, yes.
Yeah. All within about 5 minutes. It's like super, super exciting.
Yeah, but you know, then you get to get your little OB love there. He's a big fan of yours. Hamp's a big fan of yours as
likewise,
well.
Likewise.
They enjoy seeing you.
I can't wait.
It would be good to see them again. Yeah. Absolutely.
So you guys are going to stick around till 4, right, to check out, to say hello, right?
Definitely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Sure.
What? You don't believe me?
I'm going to come back just to see if you're going to be here.
I'm starting a new thing this year. When I see them, I'm going to chest bump them.
Oh, nice. I got to get that on video.
I want to get it be as sportsy as possible with them. I think both of them would throw me to the ground just as it's happening.
That's just in. Dean is not here this week because of a chest bump incident.
Right. Somehow his chest collapsed. You know what surprised me when I heard you say on the newscast, yes, I listened to your newscast.
You talking to me?
What'd you say it was the 26th
annual? 23rd. 23rd.
How can that be possible?
Well, it is.
Just seems like it started yesterday.
I know. 23rd. Which means, think of this. Seriously, just kind of a huge anniversary there for 23 years ago. It was the first one was right before 9/11, 2001.
Right.
23 years later.
Wow. That puts it in perspective a little bit,
doesn't
it?
Yeah.
Wow. Would you ever do it? I mean,
ride the bike? If I had a bike, I probably would. I've had several friends that have done it. They said it was great.
We're here every Sunday morning because some positions and responsibility are too important to take off, you know, just to ride a bicycle. I think it's been proven over and over again that when we're not here doing the show, the city is in shambles.
Complete.
The whole thing falls apart if we're not here to conduct business. So that's why we don't climb up to the top of the Hancock building when they do that. That's why we don't come up like Presidential Towers,
Soldier Field,
Marathon,
Sears Tower, like Spider-Dan.
Yeah, all the those things. We have to be here to on our appointed duties. I think it would be fun.
I think it would be great, especially in a morning like this. It's beautiful out
there. Perfect morning outside today.
Yeah.
You don't have a bike?
Not anymore, no. I don't.
Do you have a bike, Andy?
I do.
I do, too.
Yeah.
No.
You could ride on my handlebars.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I can see. Do you probably had one of those big bikes with the big high handlebars like a motorcycle?
What were those called?
Yeah, the Stingray.
The Schwinn Stingrays.
Oh, yeah. With the banana seat?
Yeah.
My friend had one
of those.
I didn't have the Stingray, but I had a Schwinn Typhoon, which I loved.
Yeah.
And I did have those big handlebars.
I remember the Schwinn Typhoon.
I forget what they were called. And I had these little kind of knobs that you put on them. Because I also had a paper route.
Oh, so you could put the bag of papers.
Strap my bag of I think it was the Daily News.
Was it the Daily News? Yeah.
I delivered in the afternoon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I would strap it on and go to town.
Yeah. Now, Gilda, my girlfriend, is a big bike enthusiast. Yep. And when I visited there, we've ridden bikes around there.
And does she ride you on the handlebars?
No. No. And then, let's see.
On the crossbar? Yeah. Are you on the crossbar?
We rented bikes at when we went to the beach along the road, the bikes along the boardwalk. That was great fun.
That's nice.
I had to, you know, it is true. Once you learn, you never forget, as they say about riding a bike. But then you kind of have to refresh yourself on how to slow down and brake and that sort of thing. But
I'd be more concerned. I don't ride my bike as much as I should, but occasionally I do like it, and it's great exercise. And I'm terrified when I'm riding it because of all the crazy motorists.
In the city, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's not easy to get around some areas.
Yeah. You know, when I'm a motorist, I complain about the bicyclers. When I'm a bicycler, I complain about the motorists. I'm an equal opportunity complainer.
I can see you with one of those great big bicycle wheels, you know, like a bike from like 1902. Pedaling that around. The seat way in the back.
Why, good morning.
Good day.
With a top hat
good
on.
Good day.
A monocle.
Top hat, monocle, drinking a cup of tea.
Pulling a calliope for why, music in the back.
Why, good morning, Mrs. Pennyworth. if I did bike the drive.
With that bicycle.
Well, I would do it with.
On the drive.
I think I would want to do it on a unicycle.
Oh, that'd be awesome. How about a bicycle built for two?
Oh.
A little tandem bike.
You and Melina.
Yeah, we could do that, sure.
That would be awesome.
Andy and Melina, you and me.
Yep. She likes to ride bikes.
Yeah. Isn't there a song about a bicycle built for
yes,
two?
Yes, yeah. Right. Daisy, Daisy, yeah. Give me your answer, do.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm
half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage. But you'll look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two. And that's your Sunday morning serenade.
And that's when Andy and Melina force us off the road.
Or we drive into the
and
lake.
That's when everybody just turned off their radio.
Yeah. However, Andy and I were feeling when you were describing the leaves to us. When
oh,
we,
gosh. Deciduous
oh, the
trees.
Deciduous trees.
When we
yes.
went on the Alzheimer's walk.
Well, here we are in September. That's next month.
Andy and I wanted to tie a cinder block to our ankle and jump in the lake.
Oh, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah,
I was trying to provide an educational experience.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what we were there
for. That's not what we were there for.
All right.
So.
So what is the bike, the drive thing goes till noon?
Noon, yeah.
Is that right?
Right. Things should be done by noon, yes.
All right. Let's see if I can see anybody.
Oh, I'm sure you can.
Oh, yeah, they're all over.
Andy, can you see them from where you are? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Traffic is free-flowing.
I had to open the blinds because
there were a number of them stopped along the Lakeshore Drive Bridge there taking pictures.
There are a lot of people, when I came in this morning, people with their bikes strapped to their cars.
Yeah, I saw that myself.
And then I guess they, I don't know where, is there a starting point or do you just
you can get on anywhere you
wherever
want.
Wherever you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Number of places on the north side, like Lawrence Avenue, Fullerton, I think. All the way south, it starts on the south end by the Museum of Science and Industry, now called Science Drive.
Yeah. Ooh, is it really?
Yes, it's called Science Drive.
Science
is the
Drive.
Correct name of the intersection.
Didn't know that.
I didn't either until this morning.
I've asked them to please notify me when they change street names because I get lost otherwise. Like, have you had the thank goodness for GPS experience?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have that?
Oh,
that,
yeah.
I mean, you know, we're all born and raised here. We think we know the city pretty well. I think I know the city pretty well. But sometimes I have absolutely no idea where I am. And it's thank goodness for the GPS.
But have you ever had the opportunity to see your GPS and not know where you are either?
Oh.
That I have not had.
That happened to me. As a matter of fact, it happened to me yesterday. Yeah. Well, I set my GPS. I know how to get home from here.
But I would hope.
It's usually for how long it's going to take me so I can figure out which route I want to take. And I was on the Kennedy going north, and it had me on Grand Avenue. And it just, I kept stopping it and starting it and stopping it and starting it, and it was all messed up.
Wow.
That would be the
reason why.
That would be the great Apple map that I was using yesterday.
It's AI taking over.
Could be.
Yeah.
Andy thinks he knows where he's going. Exactly. I am taking him somewhere else.
Go to Grand Avenue and keep going west.
I am taking him to D'Amato Bakery.
He will be in Iowa
you
shortly.
You have missed the turnoff.
But doesn't the GPS also, I mean, you think you know, I do this all the time where I think I know the best routes. Mm-hmm. And GPS has another opinion?
Yes.
Because aren't they taking into account closures,
yep, traffic,
slow traffic, yep, you know, all those sorts of things that play into it. So more often than not now, as much as I hate AI, and I think it's going that we are going to be the subservient race to AI, and they will be our lords and masters one day soon. I've been paying attention to what GPS says because most of the time it's right.
Yeah, you know, there's those times you play a game of chicken with it too because you, like you said, you think you know where you're going, and you're like, wait, why is it telling me to go here? I'm just going to ignore it, and then you run into like a solid wall of traffic. And you're like, oh, come on,
right? Yeah. Traffic has been insane lately. The last couple of months, maybe. Yeah. Partially because construction, partially, I don't know where all the cars are coming from. It's crazy. Busier than ever.
I still have fold-out maps in the glove compartment.
Do you really?
You're laughing. I do.
Do you really?
Yes. I do.
He prints out MapQuest maps.
I have a feeling he's talking about the old Texaco maps.
Oh, he is.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
The old fold-out
maps. That's what I'm talking about.
See, my dad still has those in the car because a couple times when I did the drive with him from Florida back here to Chicago, he has all the states we're going to go in just in case something goes wrong with the GPS.
There you go.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
Well, I guess that's wise.
Yep. Beyond his years.
The roads have been updated about 15 times since those maps were printed, but
hey, that road wasn't here.
More like 30 since given the age of some of mine.
Boy, I used to have all the maps too.
Yeah, and he used to with AAA. He used to go, and when we'd take our family trucks to road trips from Chicago to, say, Denver or Washington D.C., we get the map, the book, the atlas.
Oh yeah,
and it would highlight the routes for you.
Right. So convenient to have in the car when you're trying to figure out where you're going.
Of course, you got to turn the map one way, the sideways. Yeah.
When I did my first Route 66 trip, I bought maps of all the 8 states that it goes through. Planned it out in advance.
Well, things have changed.
That was over 30 years ago now, but that's what I did.
Human is using a map. Take him on Grand Avenue.
Keep going west.
Drop him off somewhere in Elmhurst. All right.
Is that your imitation of the robot on Lost in Space?
Yeah, that's my patented.
That's your patented AI voice.
The robot in Lost in Space was AI before its time, right?
Yes, it was.
Anyone who could, you know, tell Will Robinson when there was going to be danger.
Danger, warning.
Yeah, that's.
He was the first home security system.
He was. I guess I can't say the A word. The system. every time I've said that system that starts with an A, and I turn on everybody's radios and I won't say what it is.
But, oh, that word, yes, oh, yeah. Right, no. Okay,
yep. But yes, okay. So we'll keep you posted on Bike the Drive today if you're going to, because it's tomorrow's holiday, so a lot of people still have you know, it's only half the weekend right now. So we'll keep you posted on that, tell you about things to do going on for the weekend. We've got one-on-one interviews today with Catherine O'Hara, Jenna Ortega, Winona Ryder, all from the new Beetlejuice movie. We'll share all of that with you. And also our pal Frank Ferrante is going to stop by today. Remember him from Teatro Zanzani?
He's got another show going.
Well, he does this Groucho Marx show, which is amazing, that he's been taking around the country. But he's bringing the Groucho show and his character Caesar from Teatro Zanzani. He'll explain it all when he comes in today. And he holds the honor of being the only guest that I've ever had on WGN, ever in my 30 years plus here on WGN, to take his shoes and socks off and put his feet up on the table. And I told him he could come in today if he promises not to do that. Do not want to look at anybody's feet this morning. Well, we're doing a show. He's just back from Italy. He went back to where his family is from in Italy. And he's been posting pictures on Facebook. And I can't wait to hear more about that trip.
Did he go in Italy?
Puglia?
Not sure where that is.
Puglia? Yeah, he'll explain. He met relatives that he never knew and found similarities. It's amazing. I've talked to many people that have gone back to either places in the U.S. and met relatives that they never knew, that, you know, they had never met before, or gone back to, quote, the old country, to where their, you know, family origins were. And they meet people who are their cousins, their relations, with whom they share so many things, and even physical attributes. Not only look like each other, but they have similar hand gestures and you know, things like that that I think are kind of ironic. Apparently, I'm the only one who thinks that.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. I was just going to work in the fact that Dad and I did that twice in Germany. Went back to Regensburg, Germany, where our ancestry was from.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's Frank. He's going to talk about all that stuff here today.
Okay.
And anything else?
Well, I have a newscast in a little less than 3 minutes.
I know that.
I have some. Just reminding you.
Yeah. All right. I've done this show before. Okay. I'm familiar with the format. We'll do. You'd never know it by listening to the show, but believe me, I do know what's going on for the Far-Flung Forecast, our weekly compendium of fascinating facts and figures, all presented to us by Schwanny the Barber.
He's a nice boy, Andy.
Oh, he's such a, oh, he's that's a, such a nice
sit down in the chair, and I'll take care of you next.
Oh, they're backed up until 4 o'clock. Thank you very much, Floyd. I mean, Dean. And good morning. Get out your compasses and protractors and newfangled devices. We're actually headed out to Long Island, on New York, this week.
What?
To Rockville Center, Rockville New York. Center, and New York. Center, by the way, is of the old English spelling variety.
R-E-N-T-R-E.
Yeah. Rockville Center.
Is there a time when you're supposed to spell it R-E and times when you're supposed to spell it E-R?
If there are, you mean times? You mean an appropriate time and place to do it?
I mean, is there an appropriate application when you would spell center with an R-E, and an appropriate application when you would spell it with an E-R? Same thing with theater. You know, some places spell it E-R and some places spell it R-E.
Yeah, right. They still spell it R-E in Great Britain, don't they?
In many places here they do, too.
Yeah.
And I just think they're being fancy.
Right. They're being fancy, you know. But Rockville Center goes back quite a ways. So, you know, its roots being in the 18th century when, you know, we were still ruled by the British here. So it makes sense that it would be Rockville Center. C-E-N-T-R-E.
Sentra.
Sentra. It is also abbreviated as RVC. So if you really want to be hip and trendy, if someone asks you where you live.
And I do.
I'm an RVC.
I want to be hip and trendy.
I'm an RVC. But we bring up RVC today because 55 years ago tomorrow, a bank, Chemical Bank, if you remember that name, Chemical Bank, had a branch in Rockville Center and installed the first ATM.
Get out of here. Really?
55 years ago tomorrow Rockville Center, New York. That changed everything in banking. So Rockville Center has that distinction of being, a life-changing center for whatever came through in banking. The rest is history, as they say.
I remember doing a radio show. It wasn't 50 years ago. But I do remember when ATMs, cash stations, as we
first called them,
were becoming more and more popular. And I was very anti-cash station because I thought it's going to put all these tellers out of work.
Well,
and I don't want to put the tellers out of work, but I got to say, now I sort of enjoy the convenience of them.
After 55 years?
Same at the grocery store, with the cash registers you do yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, too.
Mm-hmm. And the thing of it is, too, is that this might be a little bit on the way out. Perhaps not entirely, but more and more. We all use our cards, credit or debit, just to pay, to swipe the card or tap the card.
Yeah, you don't even need cash anymore.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But 55 years ago tomorrow, Rockville Center, New York, at the Chemical Bank branch there, had the first ATM cash station. And they're having nice weather there today. It's partly cloudy and 73.
Yeah, very nice.
So
I wonder what that experience was like to be the very first person to use an automatic machine to get money.
Yeah. You know, tell it how much you want. And then, how long have you had a card? You know, I'm going to say I've had one since college, over 45 years now.
Pretty much since it started.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. But it was always like emergency money.
Well, that's a good rule of thumb.
I kept it for emergencies. Because I felt like I don't want to take some teller's job away from them,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which I've now reversed my.
I need the cash right now.
Yeah, actually, I don't even really.
Well, okay, on average, do you pay more with your credit or debit card
all the time
instead of cash?
All the time.
Yeah. Right.
I keep some cash in my pocket just in case. But I'll bet I haven't touched it in months.
You still have it, though.
Yeah,
you have. Do I want some?
Yeah, you want some?
There's a lot of places that won't take cash.
That's true.
That's true. Yeah.
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 Very true.
Certainly started around COVID, the height of COVID. And then there are still places that did not go back to cash.
Some places are
card transactions only.
Strictly, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I still would like it if you gave me your PIN number, though, if that would be all right. A little something for all the bikers on Lakeshore Drive today listening to WGN Radio. I can tell they are, because when they drive by the river, they wave at us going over the river, the bridge. 9:44, Dean Richards, Sunday morning. WGN, time for the Week in Health. Dr. Jeremy Silver joining us. He's the Medical Director of Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Just in general, Doctor, good morning, first of all. Nice to have you with us, as always.
Good morning, Dean.
So people getting on their bikes, for the first time maybe in, months to do Bike the Drive today. Is there any kind of preparation one should go through to, before they actually get out there?
Well, first of all, the very first thing I always do when I get on a bike is put on my helmet. So head injuries, even off a bicycle, can be severe, debilitating, or life-changing. And it's so easy to just strap one of those things on. So I'd always recommend a helmet. And then, of course, stretching before you get on the bike. The older I get, Dean, the more my legs feel like two pieces of timber. And so I try to stretch those hamstrings out.
I would think that you'd have to train a little bit cardio-wise, right? Because if you're going from one end of Lakeshore Drive to the other, even though you can stop and rest, that's a pretty good cardio workout, isn't it?
It is. You know, in some senses, it may be an excellent stress test, but hopefully not. But, you know, the key is if you have any kind of underlying heart condition or chronic condition such as kidney disease or diabetes, it's good to run your exercise regimen by your physician just to make sure that you're not overdoing it. Like you said, it can be, you know, it can be dangerous to overexercise. I guess the good news is on a day like today, it's so nice and cool outside this morning that
right.
at least we're not contending with severe heat.
Yeah, that's it. It is kind of a perfect morning for something like this. And, you know, people can stop and, you know, hopefully they've brought some water or, you know, sports drink or something along with them so they can rehydrate while they're going through it. I don't think that there are too many people that are, you know, taking this like the Indy 500. I notice a lot of families out there and, you know, people are doing it just to have a family event in a place where you never really get to ride your bike ever. So, you know, hopefully everyone's going to be okay with that. Now, you say that you find that you the less you ride your bike, the stiffer your legs are. I find the less I ride my bike, the smaller the bike seems to get somehow every year.
I can't argue with it.
I don't know what kind of masochist invented these bike seats that are so tiny.
You know, we were actually biking up the North Shore yesterday with my son, who did 10 miles for the first time. He's a young guy. And he turns and says to me about halfway through, "Dad, should this hurt?"
Yeah, right. Your son is 100% correct on that. It shouldn't hurt, but it does for some reason. So let's, where do we start off this week? Let me just start with a quick COVID update, because we're still getting news about new vaccines and numbers going up. We're starting to hear, interestingly, I guess not surprisingly, that a lot of people who are at the DNC at the United Center are out with COVID now. That's not a big surprise if you're in a place with that many people at one time, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it is still out there circulating and mutating, thought to be at this round pretty infectious, meaning that it's pretty easy to spread, and then you're in an enclosed space and the air is circulating or the person beside you is laughing or coughing and there you have it.
So all the you know, proper precautions probably make some sense in that there is a little bit of an outbreak now. And as the weather is going to begin to cool down, although it's not going to happen for a week or so, at least anyway, more and more people are going to be inside, so that's going to be an issue. What's the latest on all the vaccine updates right now?
Yeah, so, you know, we're still in this flirt variant, which is the most recent variation of the virus, and it's continuing to mutate as we discuss. The good news is that the most recent round of vaccines that's coming out actually this week, I believe the first week in September, you're going to see this at least in you know, the big box pharmacies, the CVSs and the Rite Aids, is going to be targeted to these circulating variants, which is great news. So it's a great time to go in and get your fall vaccines, which would include the flu, COVID, and certainly others, depending on your age and vaccine status. But certainly now is a great time to go ahead and get that done.
Yeah, you mentioned the flu vaccine. Is this a good time to get it? Because normally I think people usually wait until closer to January for their flu vaccines.
Yeah, the flu, you know, there's never a bad time to get the vaccine. And I usually get it in the fall, sometime in late September, early October. That's when I tend to go and get vaccinated. But it certainly doesn't hurt you to get the vaccine anytime, even in the middle of the summer. You say, I forgot to get it. It's never going to hurt. They do come out with a new vaccine every fall, and it's based on what they're seeing over in Australia as the flu kind of circulates from that part of the world over to this hemisphere. But definitely, the new COVID vaccine is going to be ready like I said, I believe next week or this coming week, I should say.
Okay.
So great time to do it.
A couple of COVID-related questions already coming in from the 520 area code. I've had vertigo since COVID in November. Is there a correlation between vertigo as a long COVID symptom?
I'm sorry to hear that. You know, long COVID can really impact the body in a lot of different ways, and it's certainly conceivable. Some studies say up to 30% of COVID-19 patients that have long COVID or extended symptoms have had sort of neurologic symptoms that can include vertigo, the spinning sensation, or tinnitus, that's the ringing in the ears. And so I would recommend to that person that they get referred to a neurologist. That's a person who specializes in disorders of the nervous system, so they could potentially get treated or hopefully cured from that at some point.
But that is something which can come from having COVID, vertigo?
Yes, it could.
Okay. Here is someone asking, who should take Paxlovid for COVID?
Great question. So Paxlovid is an antiviral. It's actually made up of two separate drugs that basically work to disable the virus and its ability to multiply in the body. And if it's taken in the first 5 days of becoming ill, if you are a high-risk person, then it can lower the risk of needing to be in the hospital and be, even more importantly, lower the risk of having severe illness or needing to be in the ICU. And there's a wide, broad definition of high risk. So some say anybody over 50, others say over 65 years of age, but certainly over 65 years of age, and anybody with a chronic condition like cancer, diabetes, heart disease, pregnant women, if your immune system is weak or you have an autoimmune disease, and even for folks with mental health disorders. So that's a lot of folks that could stand to benefit. And there's some thought, speaking of long COVID, that taking Paxlovid may limit or help reduce the risk of developing a long COVID symptom. That's still kind of being looked at, but a lot of reasons why it might be in your best interest to take that medicine.
Okay. And what kind of relief should it provide to you?
I don't know that you'll necessarily feel a relief. It won't shorten the course, meaning that you'll still be sick the same number of days as you were. You just may not be as sick as you might have been had you not taken it, which is a hard thing to wrap your mind around. But I think the idea is, if you think about somebody who's super ill on life support on a ventilator, and then you think about yourself coughing and feeling horrible in your bed at home, there's a big difference between those two individuals. And the idea is that if you're in that group that could benefit from taking it, you're essentially buying yourself an insurance policy. So you're still going to feel like total garbage. It's still going to be miserable, but you're buying down your risk of having something seriously bad go wrong.
Pretty much since we started talking about COVID on this segment, 4 years ago, maybe something like that, people have constantly had questions about their vaccination schedule. Here's the 708 area code saying, I had a COVID shot in July. How long should I wait to get the new shot? I'm 75 years old. Another that says, I just got a COVID booster in April. How long should I wait to get the new booster?
So for the July person, I assume that's July 2024. probably I would wait a bit. You know, I would probably give it 6 months before I went and got vaccinated again, just because I don't want to wait too long because I want to take advantage of the new vaccine. But I do have some immunity from that recent vaccine. And so let that immunity wane a bit before taking the new one. But as always, individual circumstances may vary, and I would certainly have that conversation with your doctor. As for the person who was writing about the April vaccine, that's a little further back. We're now hitting September. I think it's probably reasonable to start considering moving on to the new series. But again, it may depend on individual circumstances. So definitely talk to your doctor. But that's my general recommendation for both those folks.
Is it generally 6 to 8 months that you would wait before you got a booster, or a year? Or is there really not a time frame you can put on it?
I think somewhere in the 3 to 4 month range is probably the early, like kind of the first part of that a wait period, if you're going to be on the early side, and then 6 to 7 months on the late side. But then there are folks that specialize in the immune system, and I've seen other numbers out there. So whenever you start to see a lot of folks saying a lot of different things, you know, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. But I think somewhere between 3 and 7 months is probably the right time frame.
Yeah, here's another that said, after all these years of avoiding COVID, I finally succumbed with a mild case. I'm 75 years old in pretty good health, but should I get the newest vaccine soon or wait?
Yeah, there's another great example. You've got immunity from recently being infected. Unless this person, let's say, for instance, the person then let out that they had leukemia, you know, and then I think I would be a little more stringent. I'd maybe count. I'd say, okay, let's count 90 days and get you vaccinated. But if this person is otherwise healthy and they just had the virus, I would give it a few months personally and maybe wait towards the end of the year to try and extend that immunity.
Yeah, some great advice. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. I hope you have a great Sunday today and a great Labor Day weekend. Doc, thank you so much.
Dean, take care.
You know, I get a pain in my stomach every time I hear this story reported, and you have to report it. But the horrible story of the young man, Hirsch Goldberg Polan, an American, Israeli American with Chicago roots, who was whose body was found. He was one of the hostages taken by Hamas in the October 7th attack. Now confirmed that he is dead, along with five others.
Six others. Six in all. And keep in mind also, Dean, that early on he lost part of an arm. In captivity.
When he was taken hostage, right?
Yes.
That an explosive went off and he lost part of his arm. His parents have been very, very much in the public eye. They spoke at the Democratic National Convention, and it was heartbreaking, and it's even more heartbreaking now when we hear the news of these senseless deaths, nonstop senseless deaths out of that region. Just absolutely horrible. And just wanted to acknowledge that, and we'll move on and continue right after this. Pearl Jam, rocking your WGN. Last night at the Friendly Confines, it was it Friday? Thursday and Friday? Thursday and Saturday, I think, for Pearl Jam at Wrigley Field. And I just hear they blew the roof off the place both nights. The both shows were amazing. Eddie Vedder and company, they love playing Wrigley Field. They have a special connection to Wrigley Field. And sounds like it was a great time.
Did you see who ended up on stage last night?
Did not.
Jared Payton.
Get out of here.
So Eddie Vedder,
I noticed that Eddie Vedder was wearing a Walter Payton jersey.
He's been wearing the Walter Payton jersey during, I think it's a cover of Tom Petty's song.
Yeah.
And apparently, I was at Channel 9 last night with Chris Bowden, and we were watching our Twitter feeds, And JP up on stage with Eddie Vedder taking a selfie of the crowd. So apparently mutual friends hooked them up earlier this week because of, obviously, Eddie's connection with Chicago and Chicago sports. Huge Cubs fan, as we all know. And
he's from Evanston.
Born and raised in Evanston. And his connection with Walter Payton. And he invited JP to come up on stage with him yesterday. So
how cool is that?
There was a bunch of tweets and other social media posts from JP, who's up on the... I just texted him this morning. I said, "You are a rock star."
I thought there was an extra special glow over Wrigley Field. That would have been JP's smile.
Yes, indeed.
Is a winning smile. Yeah, not surprised. He often will bring... he brings his Chicago-ness.
He wears
it on his sleeve, and he brings his Chicago-ness.
Yeah, I mean, many years ago, he had Ernie Banks up there with him.
That's what I was going to say, yeah. That he's brought classic Cub players on stage with him.
Santo family has been up there with him a couple times.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah. Very cool. And I hear that the music on top of it, aside from all that, that the band sounded amazing and did just, you know, a great job. Shawnee, what would you say is your favorite Pearl Jam song?
Oh, I think they're all fine.
It's too bad they don't have a song that's called "They're All Fine."
They're all fine. I think that we just gave Eddie Vedder an idea for a new song.
Yeah.
They're all fine.
Didn't you think that Pearl Jam was a character on Green Acres for the longest time? Pearl.
First name Pearl, last name Jam.
Pearl was the...
Who was Pearl?
She was Pearl. She was a Beverly Hillbillies character.
Pearl Bodine?
Pearl Bodine. She was Jethro's mom.
Oh, yeah. She was Jethro's mom.
And Granny couldn't stand her.
Well, nobody could. Because she was always trying to snag the oil.
Right, you know, move in and take over in the kitchen. That's the opening act now for Pearl Jam. Pearl Bodine.
There should be a heavy metal band named Pearl Bodine. If someone was smart, they would capitalize on that nobody knows if you're not under the age of 60.
And Granny is their lead singer.
Yeah. Granny, what was her last name? Granny's last name.
I think she was a Clampett.
Was she?
I think she was a Clampett, yes. She was maybe Jed's mother, you know, grandmother to Ellie. This is how this whole family tree stuff works, you know. You haven't followed the lineage of the Clampett family?
My head is still whirling a little bit that somehow we went from a conversation about Pearl Jam to Granny Clampett.
You brought up Pearl Bodine. That's how it happened.
Only right here.
Yes. Nowhere else.
It's also my favorite time when we do stuff like that because producer Jack, now known as Jack Hammer, his eyes actually roll back into his head like a like an old-fashioned slot machine.
Oh, yeah. This is where I catch up on my sleep the first hour of the show.
Yeah, but you binge-watch all those shows, don't you, Jack?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Sure you do.
He does. Of course he does.
Real television.
One day he'll appreciate all this education that he doesn't know that he's
getting.
He'll
look back on this in 25 years and go,
I always tell Dean I learned something new on Sunday.
Yeah. For the first hour of the show, he learned something new every day.
What did you learn today?
It's like a trip. The first hour of each Sunday morning show for Jack is like a trip to the field museum.
Yeah, it's an educational program for people my age.
What did you learn
it's like
today?
It's like visiting the dinosaurs at the field museum.
So what did you learn in school today, Jack?
Well, I didn't know that was called Science Drive either, and that you don't have a bike, so.
Oh, okay.
A little two for one.
All right, okay. All right.
Our text line gone berserk with people who are shocked that we do not know that Granny is Jed's mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law.
And that her name is Daisy Moses.
Ah, okay. So she actually is Grandma Moses.
She is Grandma Moses.
Grandma Moses.
Oh, she is.
How about that?
There you go.
There's another one.
I learned that too today.
There we go.
Me too. Me too. stand in line at the Sunday morning field museum visit. You're bound to learn something in ancient history every Sunday morning here.
The best of 60s television.
WGN. That's right. Coming up on the program, remember the movie Beetlejuice?
Who is? Mm-hmm. Well, no, I thought, well, I didn't, I'm not done talking about Pearl on Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh, go ahead, please. Go right
ahead. Bea Benaderet, who was the actress,
yeah,
also played Kate on Petticoat Junction, yep, and she was the voice
There's
of Betty Rubble.
There's a little hotel called the Shady Rest at the Junction.
See, Jack, you know that song, don't you?
Petticoat Junction. It is run by Kate. Come and be her guest at the Junction. Petticoat Junction. And that's Uncle Joe.
He's a moving kind of slow at the Junction. Petticoat Junction.
Jack's.
Jack, he's left the room.
Jack's eyes just rolled back into his head again.
The room.
I want to come in there with you, Jack.
But she was also the voice of Betty Rubble.
That's for true.
Okay, I'm through. I'm done. Nope. You may continue with the rest of the program.
You know what my favorite part of that whole thing is? The Beverly Hills part. Or is it named Pearl Bodine sends her boy Jethro to live with Uncle Jed because he's a millionaire in Beverly Hills, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But leaves behind Jethro's twin sister, Jethrine.
Oh, that's right. He had a Jethrine.
Yeah,
was his sister.
That was the creepiest part of that whole show when the actor Max Baer Jr., who played Jethro, would dress up in drag as his twin sister.
Oh, that's creepy, yeah.
That was creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I wasn't as into Beverly Hillbillies as I was Andy Griffith or Dick Van Dyke, so, you know. I'm getting messages
you're getting
over
texts
here.
Like, yeah, crazy.
from the past.
That could be a text from Pearl. Who knows?
From Bea Benaderet. Stop talking about me. Let me rest in peace. Anywho, Beetlejuice. Jack, do you know the movie Beetlejuice?
No.
Late 80s, really?
You would probably be shocked at the amount of movies I have not seen in my life.
Not a moviegoer as a young boy?
Not really, no.
Interesting. You're busy playing sports, right?
Yeah.
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 I was busy in the movie theater watching movies. Andy, you know.
Sitting by yourself because your brothers sent you away.
They ditched me.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen, I don't know if I've seen the whole movie, though. I've seen bits and pieces, yeah. I have a very specific taste when it comes to movies, and usually it's because it's involving sports or something like that.
So, yeah. Interesting. Schwani, Beetlejuice?
Oh, sure. The Beatles did A Hard Day's Night and Yellow Submarine.
My goodness.
Their videos are 50 years ahead of their time. Sure, I know the Beatles.
All right. Well, apparently I'm going to be the only one interested in hearing the interviews then with.
No, I like your interviews, though. I love
Catherine
them.
O'Hara, Winona Ryder, and who else? Jenna Ortega? You know Jenna Ortega, right?
Yes, I do.
She's a fancy young actress.
Fancy young actress, huh?
We interviewed the whole
Winona Ryder. I know who these people are.
So that was her first big movie.
Okay.
The original Beetlejuice back in the late 80s. And now she's reprising her role in this sequel that's going to be coming out next week. I sat down and talked with her one-on-one. I talked with Catherine O'Hara. Schwani, you'll love this because I also talked with Catherine O'Hara a little bit about SCTV.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she was part of the original SCTV troupe.
Very creative program. Wow.
That was a great show.
Oh, John Candy on that?
Candy, Eugene Brilliant. Levy.
Eugene Moranis. Levy, yeah.
Martin Short, Dave Flannery, right? Dave Flannery, wasn't that his name?
And Rick Moranis, too. Right?
Rick Moranis.
Yeah, I was blanking out his name. Yeah. But, amazing comedy troupe from the 70s and 80s. But Catherine O'Hara, also part of this Emmy Award-winning television series with Eugene Levy, Schitt's Creek. We talked a little about that, and we talked about the new movie, of course. That's going to be coming up in just a little while. Now, I'm going to be doing one of my Dean's Night Out tonight at the Paramount Theater in Aurora, if you're out there, to see the full Monty. Make sure you say hi. We've got a little group that we've chosen who have all won tickets, and we're going to have a little pre-show reception, see the show together. I'll be reviewing the show this coming week on Bob Surratt's show. So we've got some good stuff still to come on the program, and we'll talk with the artistic director of the Paramount Theater and the director of this particular production of The Full Monty coming up a little bit later in our week in theater. So that's all on the way. We've got a special week coming up on the WGN-TV Morning News. Guess what? It's our 30th anniversary. Can you believe that? Our WGN-TV Morning News celebrating its 30th anniversary this week, and we're going to go back and look at a lot of clips. We've got some special moments, and this is what I am most looking forward to. We're going to be playing each day this coming week. We're going to be playing the grand prize game on the morning show. We're dragging out the buckets, and we have been, you know, inviting people to enter a contest to win the opportunity to come in and play the grand prize game with us to win some incredible, valuable prizes. So that's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be about 7:15, 7:20 each morning. We're going to play the grand prize game.
One question.
Yes, sir.
Will the contestants be chosen by the tips and the tips only of the Magic Arrows?
Well, the contestants have already been chosen.
Oh, so no Magic Arrows.
So then there will be no Magic Arrows. There will be no Bozo Pewter. Remember when they switched to that? That might have been after your time.
Yeah, okay. How about prizes like a new mode hosiery with the no-bind top?
We do not have any.
No?
We do not have any undergarments to give away.
Will there be a silver dollar dropped in bucket number six?
There will not be. Wow, you guys are really making this sound like it's going to be terrible.
We're
now
trying to make it authentic.
We've got some wonderful, wonderful prizes.
And I remember when some kids hit bucket number six, they'd get bicycles.
Right.
It was great.
Yeah, we've got some fantastic prizes for people. But, yeah, undergarments we do not have. Seymour Paisen scarves we do not have. Bun bars, remember? That used
yes.
to be a, that used to be popular on the Bozo Show to give away bun bar candy bars. What else? They used to give away games, you know, things like that. But the contestants have been chosen through the drawing. You know, people have been given the opportunity to mail in their names, and then their names have been chosen. And they, I take the Ringmaster Ned role on this. And I will be guiding them through.
You are the perfect person to do it.
Through buckets number one through
six.
Six. And with each bucket, there is a fantastic prize from one of our fine sponsors.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's 7:15.
About 7:15.
Every day this week?
Every day, well, Tuesday through Friday.
Because, yeah, tomorrow's holiday.
Because of the holiday.
Yeah, okay.
I'm taking off tomorrow.
Can I come over?
Sure.
You won't let me in, but...
You can come to the building. Security will stop you at the gate, but you can try. You wouldn't be the first one to try to get in. Yeah, so that's going to be... It's a special week, but what's really going to be fun is we're going back and you know, getting a lot of our old clips. I can't believe the show has been on the air for 30 years.
It's been a great run.
Doesn't that sound like an eternity?
It really does. But, you know, that 30 years is about right. But, boy, has it really changed the landscape of morning television in Chicago.
Yeah, it really has. And I've not been there for the full 30. And I've been on what seems like an eternity.
No, 20 years at least.
I've been
25
on.
25, maybe?
I started on the morning show in 1990. Yeah, no, the year 2000 I started.
Okay, so that's 23 years, 24
yeah.
years.
Yeah, I've been on yeah. since the year 2000. Just, you know, I would occasionally pop up and do a celebrity interview, and then 9/11 came along, and everything stopped. You know, we weren't doing celebrity interviews. We weren't traveling to do them, and there was no such thing as Zoom interviews then. But once that started up again, then they brought me on board full-time on the morning show, and I haven't had a decent night's sleep since then. You think I'm kidding about
no,
that?
No, I'm not. No, you're not kidding.
Yeah, so... yeah, it'll be fun this week.
That will be a lot of fun.
Okay.
I imagine you got a great response from people who wanted to be on the grand prize game.
I would imagine that's not something, I wasn't in charge of that, but yeah, people want to play the grand
sure
prize
they do.
Game all the time.
Sure they do.
Wouldn't you want to play?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
That's why I said I'd like to come over, Andy, but you won't let me in.
Have you not played?
I have not played the game.
Andy has credentials to get into the building because he does
Andy, can you let me
there
in?
All the time.
You let me in.
I'll let you in, sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I think I'm going to be back on the morning show at the end of the month.
Oh, good. Yeah. We'll drag the buckets out.
Let's go.
See if we can get you some women's undergarments to give away. A little bit earlier, tonight is our latest Dean's Night Out. We have been running a contest the last several weeks, which you could enter to win tickets to join me to see the Full Monty, which has just opened at the Paramount. We'll have a little pre-show reception and then see this award-winning show, all brought to us by Jim Cordy, who is the artistic director of the Paramount, the director of the latest production there, the Full Monty. Jim, how are you doing there, my friend? It's nice to have you back on the show.
It's great to hear you. I'm telling you, that music mashup you have introducing getting us into the show is just makes my heart race.
Right? It took us back in time down to Rush Street or whatever, wherever it was you were dancing back in the late 70s.
Gosh.
For yeah. that whole thing, because that's what, I mean, if people aren't familiar with the Full Monty, it started as a motion picture and then made its way to the Broadway stage. Tell us about this show, which is kicking off your 13th Broadway series season.
Yeah, it is faithfully based on the 1997 film that's set in the UK. And it's a steel town. The great Terrence McNally adapted it to and Americanized it and set it in Buffalo, New York, right on the Niagara River. And the characters are all very hardworking, real people. And I'm so proud of this cast, how they've humanized everyone and made them such interesting individuals. And where they're finding all the joys in life and where they're dealing with the disappointments in life and how audiences can see bits of themselves in the story through this cast. And the singing is incredible. The orchestra is out of this world. David Yazbek. Score is brassy and bright and jazzy, and it's a show in itself just to hear the orchestra. But I'm telling you, the choreography by Tor Campbell, every element, sets, lights, it really turned out, and it really turned out to be something very much of our own. I don't think I've ever seen a production with that looks quite like the Paramount production.
Yeah.
And
it's amazing, yeah. Really, what you do, you and your talent, your crews, what you do with shows with whom we are familiar, shows that, you know, have played before. But you always breathe new life into these shows every single time. And I think that's part, for me, that's part of the joy of coming out to the Paramount. To
I love
see
hearing
these
that.
Shows. Yeah, it's great. But this show is, it's about a blue-collar steel workers town. The steel workers go out on strike, right? And they're trying to...
No. They have been let go, and the mill has been shut down, never to open.
Okay, all right. I'm trying to remember now. Yeah, the storyline. But it's these out-of-work...
Really down on their luck.
Yeah, out-of-work steel workers who are trying to figure out a way to get some money to put some food back on the table again.
Exactly. Child support, mortgages, all of it. And they're just scraping by.
So what's the biggest challenge then for you, Jim, as the director of the show and as the artistic director of the Paramount? Kind of, you know, we're going to talk in a minute about the rest of the season. You know, to take some of these shows and to what do you look for to bring new life? What is it that you're searching for when you're, you know, trying to restage some of these shows?
Well, I think a lot of these shows have a lot of caricatures in them and stereotypes. And I've been really enjoying working with a cast of actors and finding ways to humanize them and individualize them and really find the truth in the story. Sometimes that gets lost when you add music to a story, you know? It starts to take off into a whole nother genre of theater going. And I think there's a way to do both, to make it a heightened musical experience without losing the real life struggles that are going on, the very human struggles that are going on. And I don't want to brag, but I think they've really done a great job of doing that.
Yeah. And this this body of talent that you bring every time is nothing short of breathtaking. I mean, the number of actors and actresses that I've been exposed to, you know, who have maybe appeared in the Chicago area for the first time, I see out at the Paramount and doing incredible things. And every one of them that I talk to always talk to me about what a great experience it is to work in a house like that.
Oh, that does not so much good, because that's everything. That's the most important thing. The cast for the Fulmonti is, except for one individual, is a Chicago cast. The only out-of-town hire is my friend Bernard Dotson. We did the world premiere of Ragtime together in Toronto and on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
And here we are. Last time I saw him was at the Ragtime reunion concert in New York last year. And here he is here. I saw his audition and couldn't believe it that... he was available to come, and he brings the house down every show. The audiences are just eating him up. Bernard Dotson, yeah. His horse.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it tonight. I'm really looking forward to it.
I didn't realize it was tonight you're coming.
Yeah, I'm coming tonight. I'll be there with a bunch of listeners. Yeah, we're bringing a whole group out to come and enjoy the show. So.
Wow. Well, you're not going to believe these vocal performances as well. The singing is incredible in this show.
Yeah.
Well, I know they always are, but it's really striking when you're there live and you hear these voices raise up to the roof. It's they're really remarkable.
Yeah.
They're just magnificent.
You know, this is a 10-time Tony Award nominee show with great songs and great performances and... the Full Monty will run through October the 6th out at the Paramount in beautiful downtown Aurora. You guys have been a little busy in downtown Aurora these days, right?
Yes. I'm telling you, Peter and the Starcatcher is closing today over at the Copley Theater. I got friends coming in from out of town to see Million Dollar Quartet in the new Stolt Theater, and friends coming to see the Full Monty today, and I'm trying to run around and be there for everybody. We're having quite a great time of it. It's a beautiful day. You got a beautiful day for tonight.
it's on the river here. It's just gorgeous. A gorgeous day.
I just love that you all took a chance at the Paramount to bring this theater back with all these great productions that you've been doing. I don't even know how many years it's been now that you've been doing your Broadway series now, but
The Full Monty opens our 13th season.
Season 13. Now, how about that with these great shows?
13 years, Dean, my God.
Amazing. In the gorgeous, fully restored Paramount Theater. And now the new Copley Theater is open just down the street. And the Stolpe Island Theater that's right on the banks of the river where they're doing Million Dollar Quartet. You've turned it into a nice little entertainment hub down there.
I can't emphasize enough how much more it is than me, Dean. There are so many teams of people working so hard with so much dedication and skill and heart and making all of this happen. It's incredible to be a part of. It's certainly been life-changing for me to be here in Aurora. And I couldn't be more grateful for everything that's happening and everybody's work.
I want to talk about briefly what is going on with your new season, the 2024-25 season. Let me take a break and we'll come right back with Jim Cordy, Artistic Director of the Paramount Aurora and the director of its current production, The Full Monty, right after this. And we're talking with the director of the Full Monty and the artistic director of the Paramount Aurora, our longtime pal, Jim Cordy. You've got quite a season, it looks like, coming up, Jim, for 2024-25. Tell us what comes after the Full Monty.
Yeah, people should know. I'm getting all kinds of messages already. And emails about, you have to extend the Full Monty, you have to extend the Full Monty. Well, it's, you know, we got a four shows subscription season, and we got to make room now for Frozen that's coming up.
Oh, boy.
It's already got an extended run. Sorry, Dean, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's going to be your holiday show, right?
Yes.
It's going to be amazing for families to come out and let it go, if you will.
Exactly. I don't think anybody's picked up on that yet, that the same title is in both shows, Let It Go.
All right. Yeah. So that's going to be that's going to be October 30th through January 19th. The Paramount always puts on a blockbuster for the holiday season when people have time off and families are getting together and they want to come and see a show together, come and see Disney's Frozen is the perfect holiday vehicle for that sort of thing.
Right. We have the Christmas tree up front and all the Christmas decorations are up. It's a perfect spot for a family to spend an afternoon or an evening together during the holidays. And Frozen is just a spectacular show. And we're all very, very excited about it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what you do with sets and special effects and, you know, things like that. I imagine you're probably working on all of that right now, right?
We are. And it's looking magnificent, just as you would expect. We're very, very excited about it, and I'm excited about the cast coming in as well.
Excellent. What comes after Frozen? Now we're talking about in February to March. What comes out to Paramount?
It's Waitress. That's another working class show. Sarah Bareilles does the music and lyrics on this. It had quite a successful Broadway run. Katie Spellman will be directing. She did that production of Cabaret we did a few years back. Very excited about Katie coming in. I should have mentioned that Trent Stork is directing Frozen. Trent did an incredible job. The last show he did was Billy Elliot. We've got Katie Spellman doing Waitress. The cast is looking sensational for Waitress.
Okay.
Again, they're just going to be singing their hearts out, and something that really is going to reach audiences.
Yeah, that'll be February 12th through March the 30th. And then the final show of the season that's just getting started
is Cats.
Cats is coming back. How about that?
Well, it ain't the same. We're not repeating it. It's going to be totally different.
Really?
Yo, it's going to be totally different. I don't know how much I can say about it. I should have checked it out, how much I can give away.
Yeah, well, don't spoil it. Don't spoil it. I mean, suffice to say, right. What a great tease that it's going to be this classic show. I presume all the classic songs will be there, but the show will be done in a different way that if you've seen Cats before, it's not going to be the way that you guys are going to do it starting April 30th this year at the Paramount, right?
Right. We won't change a word, not a lyric, not a note of music, but you're not going to believe your eyes what is happening. Trent Sterk, again, is directing that one. And it's almost, I think it's pretty much cast. I mean, it's really thrilling what's going on. It's a really jam-packed season of entertainment, and you know how your emotions get stirred by great music? They've all got these incredible scores.
Yeah. Wow, I'm so...
Good things are happening here on the banks of the Fox.
So intrigued. What in the world is Jim Cordy going to do with Cats? I can't wait to find out.
Again, let me emphasize, it's not me. It's Trent Sterk. And that whole design team,
all right. Well, you're
really putting something exciting together.
You are the artistic director here, so you got to take a little bit of credit for it. I also wanted to mention what a deal it is to come and see these great shows at the Paramount that you guys are doing for your subscription series. Buy two shows, get two shows for free. So that's a pretty good deal to see these top quality shows for the season as well.
Tim Rader made this very clear when we started working together to make the theater accessible and to make sure it's affordable. And we have all kinds of special pricing programs for all kinds of people for special needs. There's the pay what you can, two shows during preview week. You literally can get four tickets at whatever price you name. As an artistic director, I get so much out of seeing people coming to Paramount, and it's the first time ever going to the theater, and that we're here for them. They become subscribers, it's something they can't live without.
Yeah. I hear the same thing. When I'm there, I hear the same thing. This is my first time coming to the theater. And then I see them after the show and their minds are blown by, the magic that was put on stage. So you can get information on the full Monty, on Frozen, on Waitress, on Cats. Get information on all the shows and subscriptions at ParamountAurora.com or by calling 630-896-6666. ParamountAurora.com or 630-896-6666. Jim, I know you're going to be busy tonight. I hope I get to see you, but if not, I totally will understand. always nice to talk to you, and I hope you have a great Sunday night here. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Dean.
So are they still biking the drive?
Yeah, right. They will be for about another hour yet.
Okay. Yep.
Doesn't look as crowded out there right now.
No, probably it's winding down.
That's why I asked. I hardly see anybody out there.
Everything wraps up around noon. So, as a matter of fact, many of the closures around Grant Park will also be wrapping up around noon. Columbus, all the entrances from Michigan and or Lakeshore Drive through Grant Park were closed this morning. Getting in.
Do we know when it's going to be next year? Because I would like to put it on my calendar so I could take
it. So you want to do it?
Yeah.
And ride the big 19-2 bicycle up and down Lakeshore Drive?
That or a unicycle.
A unicycle. Okay.
Schwani will bring his electronic bike. Kind of the pedal. Just
the e-bike.
Yeah, he'll just ride.
I imagine they allow the e-bikes on this.
I think I'd be scared of an e-bike.
I'm trying to learn how to do it.
Powerful.
I'm trying to learn how to do it.
Have you done it?
No, not yet, but I'm taking baby steps with it. Or maybe I should say baby bicycle lessons.
I think I'd be scared to be on
that. Yeah, it's, they are quite powerful.
Those things scare me in those scooters.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the scooters, yeah.
Those scare me. I was driving someplace and some young punk.
No, listen to you.
Some young punk
right,
on a
man.
Scooter is zipping through all the cars.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And all I could think was, if there's an accident, you're not going to win.
No.
No. Nope.
Car versus scooter, you very rarely, if ever, see
very
scooter winning.
Very rarely take out the car
when
something like that happens.
Yep.
So I thought, you know, if I was on one of those scooters, and I know people do all the time, I'm sure it's very convenient, it's environmentally friendly, I get it. I get all the reasons why you should do that. But boy, it sure seems dangerous.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah. Well, in my, for me, my motto would be just stay in your house. I don't even want to.
From Lydia.
The great Groucho Marx. Lydia, the tattooed lady. The perfect way to bring on our next guest, because if anyone is capturing the spirit of Groucho Marx these days, it's our longtime pal, Frank Ferrante, who starred in Teatro Zanzani for, before the pandemic, when the pandemic was down, and then when the pandemic was lifted, spent an awful lot of time here in Chicago as his Caesar character. And now Frank is bringing both Caesar and Groucho back to the Chicago area. And what a pleasure to welcome you back to our little studio and to see you do your Groucho dance while I'm playing Lydia, the actual Groucho here. Hello and welcome back.
Thank you, Dean.
Why am I not hearing your microphone, I wonder?
I don't know.
Wait a second here. Now try it.
I was doing an evening with Harpo all of a sudden there.
I couldn't hear you.
I am happy to be back here, Dean. Thank you for that welcome. You know how I love being here and working here and what a joy it's been. You know, cumulatively, I think I've worked on stage here for 3, 4, 5 years in the last several years straight through, so it's been great.
You have a special connection with Chicago audiences.
I do. I'm lucky. I've been really grateful. The audiences, I always say, tell you how they feel here. No one pulls a punch here. They like you. They like you, and it's mutual. You know, and they're big laughers. People want to have a good time.
Yeah.
And you know, more than ever, people are looking for a laugh. Look what we're going through. I'm here to in town to do a private event. And don't make any jokes.
Ooh, there, Mr. Fancy.
Well, private event can mean anything at this point.
I think I know what it means. I think we all know what it means.
And it's just some guy came up to me afterward. You never know how these things are going to go. And so I flew in for that. And he goes, you know what? I needed a laugh with all that's going on in the world. Just thank you for the laugh.
That's true.
And I forget that. You know, I see myself as an accountant. This is what I do for a living. So when you hear some affirmation, it's a good reminder.
Very nice. And I want to mention that you did this private event with your daughter.
I did.
Who is also seated here in studio with us.
She is. My daughter, Lucy Ferrante.
Yeah, yes.
Well, back to Chicago.
She's also doing stand-up comedy, by the way.
She is doing stand-up comedy, and we have...
As a responsible parent, shouldn't you stop her from getting into this?
We see you as the godfather of this hell, okay? She sees that it's possible that two people who talk for a living can actually...
Make a living?
Yeah, make a living.
Yeah, okay.
But it's been great. You know, you talk about Chicago. I got to get better because of Chicago, because you know, I get to do Groucho, I get to do these circus shows, and Lucy, my daughter, and my son have been observing the impact of Chicago and audiences and media and merchants and the community at large.
Oh, right.
So Lucy is doing stand-up comedy. She's at the Lincoln Lodge. She's at the Den. She's at the Laugh Factory. She was in L.A. at the Comedy Store. I'm so proud of her. 22 years old, and she's got a show. I'm going to say it. September 20th.
Good. Yes.
At the Lincoln Lodge.
All
right. She's hosting. But so she hosts and does stand-up, but that's Chicago because she saw there's possibilities. We know we're from Los Angeles, but we do more here. We have more of a connection, certainly, to this community than we do back home.
So I want to get these shows out of the way and talk about these because I want to spend a little time talking about your recent trip to Italy.
Okay.
Because I'm so moved by what I saw and what I read and what you posted on social media about going back to where your grandparents were from.
That's right.
And from where your ancestors are from. Very, very moving. But first, let's plug your shows.
But let's get on with the quiz. That was very grouchy of you. It was nice talking to you, but let's play the quiz.
Yeah. You're bringing your Groucho show. Which is phenomenal.
Thank you.
I've seen in person. I've seen it on PBS stations. Mm-hmm. It's on video. It's on 8-track. It's on, I don't. You've got it everywhere for some reason. Cassette recordings. People don't even have 8-track recordings anymore. And Frank has his Groucho show.
Yeah.
But it's like a one-man Groucho show that you're bringing to the theater at the center in Munster, Indiana.
Yes.
October 5th and 6th.
That's right. Matinee shows. You know, Dean, this is my 40th year doing this show. I first did it in a church hall where I grew up in Sierra Madre, California. It was a senior project at USC. And in the audience at USC was Groucho Marx's son, Groucho Marx's daughter, Maury Riskin, who wrote for the Marx Brothers. They're great films. And it's been 40 years. And the show is, it's like just what you said. It's really a best of, and you've seen it. It's his crazy songs like Lydia the Tattoo Lady. I love this lyric, by the way. Lydia, Lydia, say, have you met Lydia? Lydia the Tattooed Lady. When she stands, the world grows littler. When she sits on Hitler. That was never in the film, but he sang that for the boys on the road. So the show is storytelling, and it's songs. It's part history, part stand-up comedy, which my daughter does. And my favorite part, of course, is the crowd work, the interaction. And I'm fortunate I've had so many at-bats. Hopefully I've gotten better over the years. So I'm doing that show in Munster. But, you know, I've done that show in Chicago, downtown, and probably, honestly, in the last 30 years in 35 suburbs of Chicago. So I always love playing here.
Yeah, you'll love playing out at the theater at the center in Munster. It's a lovely theater.
Uh-huh.
Lovely community, the area, one of the areas of Chicago, I think, that'll really embrace the kind of show that you do.
Oh, that makes
me happy. With Groucho and the crowd interaction and all that. I think it's going to be in Northwest Indiana, but also Southsiders from Chicago who are going to love coming out there. It's going to be very convenient.
Oh, that makes me happy.
To come and see the show. But then you're back again in a month or so, up at the North Shore Center for Performing Arts in Skokie, November 27th through December 1st. Is that Thanksgiving weekend?
It is Thanksgiving week.
Thanksgiving weekend here. You're bringing your Caesar character.
Hello, everybody. Look at you. Dean, you're a beautiful man.
You know, yeah, I'll be doing that. And that's the show that you were talking about.
Your daughter's looking at you like...
She just left the building like, this is my father. Yeah. He spawned me. Why? Why did he spawn me?
Can I leave right now? And that's not her. That's me saying
that. Wait a minute. Now cut that out.
Now, wait a minute.
Oh, Dean Chester, you see. so I'm going to come back with that guy. And we thought, this is... you know, it's the Caesar character. I'm a ringmaster. He's this over-the-top Latin lover. Very interactive comedy, which is in the vein of vaudeville, burlesque, and Groucho crowd work, as you've seen and been so supportive of over the years. I appreciate that. Goes a long way. But they're acts, great acts. Drea Weber, who is my partner in crime, she is the director.
Nice.
She's doing Ariel. She just put up Pink in the Air here at Soldier Field.
I know.
With a brand new apparatus, and it's incredible. So she's directing. She's performing Ariel as well. She's doing Katy Perry. I think this is Hush Hush, but here we go. She's doing Katy Perry's act at the VMAs. She's on her way to New York. York right now to
amazing.
Do that. Yeah,
amazing.
So she's like this force of nature, and she's the one who's casting and bringing in these characters for this Caesar's Circus Thanksgiving week at the North Shore Center in Skokie. And, you know, we're going to have a great friend of mine I'm finally working. You love this guy. I hope you can make it. He's a comedian magician by the name of David Kaplan. And he's like watching Buster Keaton, you know, a great silent comedian. Mm. You know, the great Ballantine for those who remember.
Sure.
Reference Lost on the Living, I know. But it's classic. It's like
you came to the right show for that.
He's brilliant. And we have a local singer who's just signed on, just a great jazz singer, does great songs from the American Songbook. We've got tumblers and jugglers.
Nice.
And a dog act.
Nice.
A dog act, yeah. So it's going to be quirkier and weird, and there's no meal like before. It's just sheer comedy and acts, a show in a proscenium
fun
stage. Yeah.
Okay, North Shore Center Performing Arts in Skokie.
Yeah. Check.
November 27th through December the 1st. And we'll tell you how to get tickets to all those things in a minute.
Thanks.
Let me take a break. And when we come right back, Frank Ferranti has just returned from Italy. Mm-hmm. And I love stories like this where people connect with their ancestral roots, which is what he did. I can't wait to hear about it next. It is 11:23, and this is Dean Richards Sunday Morning on WGN. Our friend Frank Ferranti is back in town. Frank, who starred in Teatro Zanzani here in Chicago and has done his own one-man Groucho show here in Chicago, is coming back, bringing Groucho back to theater at the Center in Munster October 5th through 6th, and bringing his Caesar character to the North Shore Center for Performing Arts in Skokie, November 27th through December the 1st. I've, for some reason, follow you on social media because I'm often laughing hysterically or terrified by something that you're doing, wherever you happen to be. But what I've been so moved by your posts of recent, last few weeks, I guess, where you went to Italy and you went back to where your family is from. Take me from there. Where exactly did you go and what did you do?
I went to Bari, Italy, and there was a little town called Canedo, and three of my four grandparents were born there. And my two grandfathers were actually friends in the old country when they were boys.
Huh.
They come over around the same time, around 1920. My grandmother came over when she was 14 months. And it's this tiny village. And it's almost inexplicable. It's so charming and it's so unto itself. And it's you're in the plaza, in the square, and there's this beautiful church. And this church where three of my four grandparents were baptized.
Hmm.
And the people are loving and kind and curious. They want to know about the American actor. You know, they want to know about that. That seems to mean something. And I want to know about what it's like to have stayed there and not come over to America.
Mm.
And everyone, you know, I have cousins there. My grandfather's siblings' grandsons were there. So there were three of us, the grandsons of three brothers. One was 86, one was in his 70s, there's me. And we were bonding. And we're eating, you know, copious amounts of Italian food, of course. Just when you think it's done, every Italian in Chicago and L.A. and New York and every will relate to this.
Right.
The food, and you're Greek, you know, the food does not stop.
Yep.
Coming. It's like, okay. You start to loosen the belt up.
Right.
But, you know, I would say I'm not particularly religious, but you can't help but be moved when you walk into a church knowing that three of your four grandparents were baptized there. And I just had a very a profound moment thinking about that they were there as babies, and I loved my grandparents. You know, to the point where I studied gerontology in college. I loved older people, so I was friends with my grandparents, and they lived a long time, most of them. And so to be outside my grandma Sophie's home where she was born, I'm crazy. I want to put a plaque out there, but now it's this boarded up old shack. I was at my grandpa Frank Ferrante, who I'm named after. I was his home, and chiseled in the archway above the door, it says Domenico Ferrante.
Wow.
And no one really notices. It's way up there. And my dad was named after that Dominic Ferrante. So basically, it's atmospheric. You know, you're embraced and you're having gelato and you're having coffee and you're having, you know, homemade sauce and you're having sausages that they make. And, you know, there's really a sense of pride, too. Everything is organic. They go to the markets to bring in the food. And you know, what I took, and you hear the stories, and they tell me stories about, they all know the stories from the American cousins. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, Dean, there was my grandpa, Tony, and Antonio Torres, he came over. Most of us can relate to, we're in Chicago, all of us come from this. My grandpa came over, and he was 14 years old, Dean. He was on the boat. He lied and said he was 16. 14, he leaves his parents and his brothers. He only goes back one time to see his parents.
Wow.
He's 26, and the mom is 75, and the father's 85, and my 26-year-old grandfather goes back with his young wife and one-year-old child. And it finally hit me as a middle-aged to bordering on senior human, the impact, how profound that was. And so many of our family just left because they thought maybe they'll make more money.
In America, the streets are paved with gold in America. Don't you know that?
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
My grandmother did the same thing.
Really?
She and her sister, as teenagers, 14, 16 uh-huh. years old, something, came on a boat
yeah.
to another country by themselves.
Yes. Yeah, so my grandfather turned 15 alone. On that boat.
Wow.
He was greeted by a brother. And I think about him now. He lived to be 80. And he always seemed a little... There was sadness there. I mean, they always had one foot in the old country and one foot here in America. In my case, they grew up in the Italian district of Los Angeles. It was right next to the Chinatown. It's no longer there. Of course, all those old Italian neighborhoods are starting to, you know, go away, unfortunately. But anyway... You feel so heartened. You feel the love. I felt the passion. And they're, you know, every time we'd go out, they would treat. There'd be 25. It was like a roving Italian party to honor, you know, yours truly, just to like welcome me home. And what's beautiful, as you may have experienced when you went to Greece, is that I'm representing my grandma Sophie, my grandpa Tony, my grandpa Frank, who they knew. I'm representing my mother who visited. I'm representing my cousins.
Yeah.
And it takes on a great deal of meaning. And already I'm talking about getting, you know, citizenship for me, for my kids. And next year, if I have the dinero, I'd like to bring my kids to experience their cousins. And it's all ages. There's the 28-year-olds, there's the 86-year-olds, and they have so many great questions. They want to, you know,
it's beautiful.
Yeah, you can't be an actor there. It's like, that is like, if someone is an attorney in my family, literally there's a plaque outside your home that says it, or a professor of biology, because they're so... It's such a
proud of it,
very proud, and it's a humble existence, Dean. Yeah. But
I was in Bari the last time I was in mm-hmm. Italy. One of the stops was in Bari, and we visited an olive tree farm that was amazing.
Right,
and they showed us these trees that were thousands of years old. They said,
mm-hmm.
and experienced and sampled the wines, but they were the family that ran it. Uh-huh. All of this was so proud. To be showing their family tradition and sharing it with the Americans that had come to experience it all there.
It's so true about the pride factor. I have relatives, they're farmers, and that's what I came from, is, you know, farmers. And they literally show you photos of their grapes and the process of olive oil making.
Yeah.
And that's everything. It's olive oil and wine. That's the business. And I stayed at a great place where it was a working farm. So you had you were surrounded by vineyards. Talk about romance. Surrounded by vineyards. There were olive trees everywhere. And it was breathtaking.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. And the food, you couldn't get a crummy sandwich. You cannot. You can't get a bad cup of coffee.
I literally asked. I said, I would like to have the crummy sandwich.
It was delicious.
Why don't I have that? Where can I get one here?
It was great.
Do you have to go, or can you stay for a minute?
Happy to stay.
All right, stay for a minute. Yeah. Frank Ferranti is here, and we'll talk more about the romance of Italy mm-hmm. and all this wonderful travel, all after a check of WGN News. It is 11:37. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, coming up after 12, one-on-one with Catherine O'Hara and Winona Ryder and Jen Ortega, some of the cast members from the new Beetlejuice movie that opens in theaters next Friday. I'll tell you a little about the movie as well, but man, what a treat to sit down with Catherine O'Hara, who I worship. I think she's so great. But Winona Ryder, who Beetlejuice was her first big movie. And now she's back reprising her role in this new movie. Jen Ortega plays her daughter in the movie. And it's a lot of fun. If you remember the original movie, I think you'll enjoy that interview. That is coming up, and our Food Time show, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. We'll get into some summertime recipes and things that you can do for this Labor Day weekend. Are you a cook at all? I don't think I ever knew this.
You'd have to ask my daughter. Do you think I'm a cook?
Whether or not.
I can whip up a few good meals. I can make a good sauce. We're talking about it being Italian. It's my Grandma Sophie's spaghetti sauce.
Nice.
I can do just about anything with an egg. Keep it clean.
I beg your pardon?
You know, I think my kids are sick of anything with eggs. But, I like it. I like cooking.
Yeah.
But you are a cook. And I like your idea you were sharing with me prior.
Well, we're going to – it's not fully hatched.
Like my eggs.
Much like your eggs. we're talking about doing some trips with listeners and viewers – going to different food places around the world, traveling to food places, specifically to cook, and preferably with grandmothers. I want to cook with the grandmas, the nonas, the yayas, and learn some great recipes, see the local areas, but Dean Cooks Around the World is the working title at the moment.
I love it. Count me in. When are you going to Italy?
Well, I'll let you know when we figure that out.
But this is a great idea, because when I went out there, you could breathe deeper. It's a great, particularly what's going on these days. It's nice to have a little break and enter our past, our heritage.
Are they tapped into the political shenanigans going on in the U.S.?
Do they
think we're nuts?
A little bit. I got in a little, thank goodness that this particular relative was aligned with my political takes, which I don't have to share here. But, there's some real passion about it. We talked about politics, and this is a tiny town. But, of course, you can see everything on the Internet. They know what's going on. Yes, they know what's going on with us politically. And we talked about religion and Catholicism. Mm-hmm. And, it's different, that it's a different way of being there. It's a real different, it's still of a time. The belief system and the rituals are very much in play when it comes to the holidays, when it comes to your beliefs. But back to what you're saying, and luckily I was in complete agreement with one of my relatives who's a pretty bright guy.
That could be a little awkward if
I
had gone another way.
I had other relatives who had visited this little town, Canedo Bari, and they had opposing views politically, and that did not go over well. And they said, whatever you do, don't bring up, Trump and Biden. And of course, I knew where my relative lived in, that politically where they lean, so I was okay because I was in concurrence. But it can be. I was, because you're also speaking, broken English. There are those of us, those younger, mostly younger Italians, Canetans, as we called them, from Canedo, who could speak, and they got me through. But after 8 days, and you and I were talking about this in your Greek adventures, that you could start, you can figure it out after 8 days. You do a little bit of Spanish, a little bit of Italian, a little bit of English. And,
a little bit of charades, I found.
Charades, Pig Latin was big.
Helps me out. Yeah, Pig Latin. Wow.
Ixnay on the Igpe Atinle in day. But, and so...
Speaking of charades, though,
yes?
This is, now is kind of a funny story, that we were in, one of the trips, we were in Pisa, and decided to take a quaint little horse and buggy ride.
Mm.
And within, I would say, 2 minutes of being in this buggy, my throat started to close. And I was having some kind of reaction to something. And apparently there was horse dander on the blanket that we were sitting on in the buggy. And we're in the middle of a fairly small Italian village.
It's awful.
And we get off, and I cannot breathe. I thought, this is where it's going to end.
And this is your moneymaker.
I literally cannot breathe. And the people that I was with, we run into a pharmacy, and they are doing charades for the people in the pharmacy who do not speak English, trying to describe, they're like...
In the meantime, you're turning blue.
And, finally, they shoot me up with some Benadryl.
Oh.
figured it all out, but that's how you get by.
Yes.
I suppose, right?
Well, you know what? This is interesting. I was asking about the history of the area that I'm from my three grandparents are from Bari. And there was an 86-year-old man there who was my cousin, and he starts telling me why. I said, do you know why they use their hands so much, you know, charades? I said, no, tell me why. And in Italian, he tells me, and it's interpreted. Basically, there were so many invasions. The French were there. The Greeks were there. Everyone was there. So there were many languages happening. So the use of hands and communicating became all important. The Spanish.
Yeah.
My mother's surname is Torres. Huh. You know, so because of a Spanish invasion, and so it was all became about trying to say, you know, pointing and
to
waving.
Describe.
Pointing to Dean's throat. He can't breathe. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah. Frank is in Chicago right now. He was doing a private event, but is coming back to do his one-man Groucho Marx show at the Theater at the Center at Munster, Indiana, October 5th and 6th, and then scoots up to the North Shore Center for Performing Arts in Skokie November 27th through December 1st, Thanksgiving weekend, to do your Caesar.
Yeah, Caesar Circus.
Caesar Circus show.
Yeah.
So that should be fun.
Oh, my gosh. It's such a treat.
Did you have any actual interactions with Groucho Marx?
I did.
Remember you telling me that when you were a kid?
Well, I loved him, you know, from the time. Like you. You know, I was kidding before with you. It was like, if you and I were kids together, we'd be like watching Marx Brothers film festivals and stalking Lucille Ball.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah. That's like what every teenage kid does.
Yeah.
Sure, some kids are playing, you know, Little League, but Dean and I are stalking Lucy.
Yeah.
Hell, I'm wearing Lucy's stockings, but that's another story, which I haven't shown you my feet yet, but that was much later. I am wearing Hal Holbrook's shoes.
Is that right?
Yes. Hal Holbrook, who did the longest running one-person show in the history of the world, 62 years as Mark Twain Tonight, and his assistant gave me these shoes. I wish these could be seen. They can be smelled, but not seen.
Yeah.
But I did
you,
make...
You remain the only guest that we've ever had on WGN that have put their bare feet...
Yes.
Up on the table.
Yes. You looked at my daughter like, should I be saying this? This is how weird your father is.
Just that she was laughing.
We're being tracked by foot fetishes ever since. I'm not joking. You and I talk about this.
I did notice somebody on social media this morning saying that they were looking forward to you coming on the show today. .. I have a foot fetish.
Good morning. Enjoy your brunch, everyone.
Exactly.
But I did meet, you know, listen, I was like you. I was a comedy nut. So we grew up, Three Stooges were in reruns. You can see Abbott and Costello. You can see Martin and Lewis. You could see the Road Pictures with Hope and Crosby. There's so much comedy. Lucy's in reruns. And when we were kids, you can also see great comedians like Steve Martin, Mel Brooks, Woody Allen. I mean, there was just it was a plethora of goodness, of comedy goodness. So my hero at the time, of course, was Groucho Marx, and I was this shy Catholic kid, Italian kid, and in Pasadena area, and I see a Marx Brothers movie, and it's a day at the races, and I don't know what that meant, but I think the only Jewish kid in the neighborhood said, Frank, you know, of course, the Marx Brothers legacy is one of a great Jewish comedy. He goes, you got to put on the TV set, which we called it back then, a TV set, and I did. And there's this crazy guy stooped over with a mustache and eyebrows. And, you know, when you're 9 or 10, it's like, what are these guys doing? And he was very fast and he was very furtive and very, you know, something seemed really illicit about what he was doing. I laughed so hard because he was making these wisecracks. And I can tell how free and fun he was. And I wanted to be like that. And, you know, and here I am. I'm fortunate. But it's amazing what a great artist can do. How can, you know, I realize, you know, the word artist seems odd in when you use it for a comedian, but he was a genius. And so I always fantasized about meeting him. I dream about it, actually. I dream about going to... I couldn't drive at the time. He only lived 45 minutes away. He's in Beverly Hills. I'm in Pasadena. I was like, I wish I was 16 and had my driver's license at 17. But finally, when I was 13 years old, my father, whose birthday is today, is 84, he took the day off of work. Now, this is the kind of father I had. To take me to meet my hero, the funniest man in the world, Groucho Marx, who's now 86 years old, and he can barely move. You used to watch him on Dick Cavett. You'd watch him on Merv Griffin. You'd watch him on Mike Douglas' show, all these great. But Groucho would still be doing these interviews, kind of wheezing and barely getting through them, but still funny as all get-go, right? So my father takes the day off of work, and we go to the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, and it's noon. We're waiting for Groucho to show up to promote a book. See, you don't stop even when you're 86 to promote something. So there he is trying to sell a book at 86. And so he gets there at 3. We're waiting for 3 hours for Groucho to show up. We see Groucho. He's shuffling. He's got his beret on, and he looks like he's going to keel over. He makes it. Now, everyone, Dean, is shooed away. There's 1,000 people, mostly young people like me, teenagers. I'm 13 years old. There's college-age students. I mean, it's hard to think. And everyone's cleared away, but I stick to Groucho like I'm part of his entourage, and I'm walking to the podium, you know, like I'm part, you know, I can smell his Old Spice. I sit at his feet, and there's the great Groucho Marx. And he could barely speak. He's going, "Can you hear me out there? Can you hear me out there?" And we're waiting for a joke. And finally, someone asked Groucho the question. Groucho, you know, it's chilling, and people, it's tense. Someone goes, "Groucho, are you making any new Marx Brothers movies?" And he looks up slowly, Dean, and he says, "No, I'm answering stupid questions." And Dean, 1,000 people erupt because it's great. And then a woman says, "Groucho, what do you dream about?" And he looked at her, just shot her a burn. "What do you dream about?" And he goes, "Not you." We want him to insult. And that changed everything. He did about 10 minutes Q&A. I guess 10 years to that week, I portrayed him at age 86 in New York. It was a dream.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was very moving. That's fantastic. Like yesterday, Dean.
Yeah.
You know,
and is that what inspired your lifelong love with him?
Yeah, I think
to do a show like this.
Well, it helped me get through life. Humor helps me get through life. You know, comedians help me get through life. You know, we just went through some rough times. To me, it's like comedy and music are what kind of make the difference. But he seemed so brave. When I started imitating him in school, it was like wearing armor. I could say anything I wanted to say. You could be shy and get away with stuff. I still do. I was doing Caesar last night at this event, and my daughter Lucy was there kind of chronicling someone's walking with me. And you have license to behave badly. I've got a martini in my hand. I've got my head in the lap of some wedding guest. It was so fun. And then it's great to create. But yes, to answer your question, his fearlessness is what... I think we all need to be a little fearless with our interests in living life. And that was a lesson for me. And also that you don't have to live the way everyone else lives around you.
Yeah.
And that has given me great joy. And that's why it makes me happy that, like, my daughter is going, "Oh, look at my pop does. Maybe I can do something. I don't have to be, you know, do what's expected of me." Of course, in my world, what's expected is for you to be kind of funny.
Yeah. Lucy, pull this microphone over or pull up a little closer. The much talked about Lucy Ferrante here today. I mean, because you were around this your whole life, is that why you decided to get into this? Go ahead.
I feel like just growing up watching my dad perform really instilled this lifestyle into my brain, and it's definitely been an inspiration for sure.
Yeah. You're doing a stand-up comedy?
I am.
Pretty different from what your dad does.
Pretty different, but at the core, very, very similar, I would say. I catch myself sometimes saying little one-liners that I've grown up watching my dad say.
She texted me, what was the line? She said, "Dad, I used this line and it worked." It was some line I've been doing for like 30 years, and she got a big laugh. What was that line? Do you remember?
Some guy.
I work alone or something.
Yeah, I work alone. Someone had their foot on the stage.
Oh, yeah.
"Do you work in show business?" "No? Get your foot off the stage."
Got a classic, right?
Nice.
Yeah.
Are you going to be doing stand-up in the Chicago area at all?
Yeah, I actually run a monthly show at the Lincoln Lodge.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, every fourth Friday of the month. It's called Joke Swap. And that's my baby. I self-solo produce it. I host it. And it's been a lot of fun.
When is the next one? Do you know?
The next one is September 20th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
It's very fun. It's really a trip to see, surreal to see your kid do stand-up and be in an audience. with other, and she's, you know, she's hosting. What's great is she's curating other young Chicago comedians, which to me is a beautiful thing to do. She's 22. Both my kids go to DePaul. I mean, Chicago really impacted us, and we're from a whole other major part of the world, but this is, we've been seduced by you, Chicago.
Yeah,
and I'm looking at you, Dean.
We're a very wonderful people here.
That's true, actually.
Yeah,
I'm great. I'm really grateful because it's changed their lives. Mine too.
Yeah. Okay. So Groucho, the one man show, Theater at the Center, Munster, Indiana, October 5th through the 6th, and your Caesar Circus at the North Shore Center for Performing Arts in Skokie, November 27th through December the 1st. How would one get tickets to all of this?
You can go, there's many ways. You can go right directly to the theater's North Shore Center. You can go get it, Caesar Circus. You can go to Theater at the Center. But also, you can go on eveningwithgroucho.com, where you can see all my dates with various, you know, various shows. And if you're a Marx fan, you'll get a kick out of it. And there's a fun, for Groucho Marx fans, and I get nothing out of this except pleasure, there's a great website called GrouchoMarx.com. I own 50% of Groucho Marx Productions, which represents Groucho's name and likeness. And so there's great videos and radio. You would love it. It's vintage Groucho. And so I think your listeners would love that.
Yeah. Do you have a section on your website devoted specifically to your feet?
You know, that's where the money
clearly
is.
Clearly, there is, on social media, there is an interest in this.
Is it coming in? Are you getting emails right now? We've got it toe the line, don't we?
I like that you brought in toe. With
there you go.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to be such a heel.
Frank.
We have to stay in step, the two of us.
Frank Ferranti, this would be about the perfect time to kick him out of here. Oh,
darn it. It always happens.
It always happens.
Get the hook.
You can see him at Munster, Indiana, and in Skokie. And it's great to see you both. And Lucy at the, tell us where again?
The Lincoln Lodge.
Lincoln Lodge.
So fun.
Very good. Appreciate you coming by.
Dean, what a joy. Thank you. And thank you to your listeners who have been so great. Yeah. I get this. They keep showing up going, we heard you on Dean. So thank you, Dean.
How fun would it be if we all went to Italy together?
Let's do that.
Oh, my gosh.
Come on.
Holy smokes.
All right, folks, come join us.
That would be so fun. Chwani, are you looking forward to Andy, Hamp, and OB?
Oh, you bet.
As much as I am?
Sure. Oh, of course.
The return of our special football trio.
The Dream Team, some are calling
the Dream Team?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a highlight of the fall season.
Yeah, you guys are definitely a goat. You're the goats.
We are the goats. And that's no joking around there, right?
Yeah, exactly. So what are you guys going to talk about today?
Well, we're going to kind of recap the preseason. The Bears did finish 4-0 and what that kind of means for the season coming up. I'm sure we'll touch on some kid named Williams. They drafted number one overall, the
Caleb,
quarterback guy.
Caleb
something or other. Yep. Yeah, he's probably going to feature prominently in our show. Plus, you know, we've got two of the greatest defenders in the Chicago Bears history, so we'll talk about the Bears defense. Picking up kind of where it left off last year and if they made enough improvements on it to really have a top 10 defense this year and how they might fare in the NFC North. So there's a lot to cover in a couple hours.
Yeah, it should be fun. And then starting next week, you'll do the Bears pregame.
Correct.
Which means you guys will come on at 11 o'clock.
Right. We'll have our shift change at about 10:59 or so.
Yeah, 10:59 and 30 seconds.
Right.
I have exactly 30 seconds to get out of the studio and get Hamp and OB into the studio.
I do want to take video of your first effort at the chest bump, though, you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be my thing this year.
Okay.
Neither Hamp nor OB know this. That
I'm trying to visualize
when
this.
When they come in the studio. Well, you know, when I shake hands with Hamp, usually we'll bump fists or
right.
Something like that. Same with OB. I think we've been fist bumping.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this year I'm just going to throw myself at them for a chest bump.
Oh, that's going to be good.
See how they react.
That is going to be good. Because, of course, when Hamp shakes your hand, he's actually shaking your elbow because of how huge his hands
because
are.
Because he has the most gigantic hands ever. Yeah.
You would be wearing Bears,
pads.
Pads and stuff when you do this, you know, just to make yourself look authentic.
I think it would be more entertaining if he just if Hamp just, you know, I go to like chest bump him and he, you know, like throws me off like a,
give you a forearm,
like a moth,
sure.
like you try to
swat away a fly.
Yeah, I think he just try to.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to be critical, but the one thing I would like you as host to do, I want you to be more forceful with them.
Okay.
How so?
Well, at least once per show, I'd like to hear Andy go, Hamp, why don't you shut up? Something like that.
Okay. And then, so the next week, you'll be looking for someone to do sports in the morning with you, and we'll be looking for
yes,
a replacement.
Permanently.
Yes. And I'll tell you about my visitation at that point, too.
At least once per show, something like, OB, why don't you just zip it? Something like that.
Is that you're possible? Telling me to do what?
Oh, man.
I can't wait for you guys. I'm super excited.
We have a lot of fun. We definitely have a lot of fun. Our crew, you know, Jack Hammer's on our crew as well.
Jack Hammer, producer Jack Hammer.
Yeah, so yeah. We have a good
He's
time.
He's going to be with us tomorrow morning here, too, with Dave Plyer.
Very nice.
That's yeah. The you, us, not me, us.
Yeah. Well, I just said yeah. Us, me and Dave Plyer, okay. Jack.
All right.
Yeah. No days off.
Yeah.
For me and Schwani.
Are you going to be Jack Hammer or are you going to be Jack... just playing Jack, or how are you going to do this when you're doing your sports?
That's interesting. They actually, on the softball team, started.
You are doing the
he's
sports?
Doing sports. Yeah,
he's
yeah.
Doing sports tomorrow morning.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We're getting into the bench.
Very nice.
Yep.
It'll be fun.
It's Dave, and Jack.
Yeah. Hammer.
Very nice.
Exactly.
Well, you know, as we like to say, listen anyway. is the time. And this is Dean Richards Sunday morning on WGN. Schwani told me this morning before we went on the air, we had our pre-show meeting. Tremendous amount of rehearsal and research.
Went over the script line by line, single spaced.
A lot of people don't realize that this show is fully scripted, so well rehearsed. By the time it finally gets on the air, then we make it sound like three mopes. But Schwani told me he's going to be barbecuing today.
Ah.
Today or?
Tomorrow.
This week.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow for tomorrow. Labor Day.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Tomorrow.
Very nice.
What do you anticipate?
I am
preparing?
Leaning toward grilled tuna.
Nice.
And asparagus with roasted potatoes.
You eat a lot of seafood on the grill.
I love seafood. I've noticed. Oh, it's amazing with it. Yes. I'm a seafood guy anyway.
Yeah.
And so every opportunity I have to put it on the grill, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And it's not hard. I don't make this a difficult thing. You know, a salmon on the grill. I'm going to do the tuna, which will be the first time for me to do the tuna. So this will be new. But the grilled asparagus and roasted potatoes like that.
Well, how are you planning on doing that? I also am a big seafood fan. I see food and I eat it. No, how are you planning on doing the tuna?
What do you mean?
Like, how are you going to prepare it?
Well, I'm just going to put it on the grill.
Going to season it at all?
Oh, yeah, right.
Marinate
right.
it?
I season the tuna.
Salt and pepper?
I have a mixture of spices. Ooh. A friend of mine gave me a New Orleans cookbook
Ooh.
A number of years ago, and there was a recipe or a list, if you will, for kind of a Cajun-type spice with cayenne pepper in it,
oh,
and
nice.
Bay leaves, and a little bit of salt. But it's so good on tuna, specifically tuna.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And so I'm gonna use that, and with the asparagus, olive oil, and black pepper.
Yeah, you can't beat that. I'm telling you, really, all you need is for the asparagus. All you need is the olive oil.
Yeah.
Careful not to overcook it.
Right. Right.
And then afterwards, I mean, you could be done right there, really.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe put a little lemon on it. That's delicious. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love, I'll put some balsamic vinegar on it.
On the fish.
On the
asparagus. On the asparagus. Yeah.
On the asparagus. Right.
There's one thing that I've never been able to get right, and I don't know why. My friends, years and years ago, back home, my friends' parents had a very nice backyard, and Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, cookouts. His mother would combine potatoes and onions and green pepper, wrap it up, season it with, you know, pepper or something, and wrap it up in foil, and then put it on the grill, kind of steam.
Foil packet, like a foil packet.
And I've tried it. I just can't get it right. Not like they did. It was just delicious. And
well, it depends on the, you know, the seasoning that you're putting in there. I've done foil packets with potatoes, vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it. I've put shrimp in with it. I've put chicken in with it.
Shrimp would be great with that.
Yeah, really, really good. You got to put a little olive oil in the seasoning. I like to put, for something like that, I like to put salt, pepper, and maybe some rosemary or thyme.
Rosemary or thyme with it.
Something like that. It gives it a nice kind of floral taste to it. But indirect, I would do it indirect cooking, you know, no flames underneath it in the beginning, and then maybe some flames at the end.
Later.
Just to give it a little browning.
Because
you want to make sure that it's thoroughly cooked. But, yeah, that's super easy and super easy cleanup.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
That's another part of it as well.
Now, when you do tuna, how long on each side on the grill for you?
I think I would do indirect heat to start. I would use an internal thermometer rather than, you know, trying to eyeball it. You want to get seafood. You want to get you know, it should be a high grade tuna. And should be about 140, 145 degrees.
Right, yeah.
Which might be, let's see, if it was indirect heat, say you get your grill up to about 400 degrees indirect heat, maybe 6-7 minutes on each side.
That's about what I was thinking. Yeah.
Something like
10
that.
Minutes tops. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I would, I think I would put put it in a teriyaki marinade.
The teriyaki marinade.
I love teriyaki.
That would be good.
Mm-hmm. And some pepper. Teriyaki already has a fair amount of sodium, so I'm not sure I would add any more salt to it. And then sprinkle some green onions. Chop up some scallions or green onions.
Green onions and put it
on
there.
Something like that on there.
Wonderful.
Andy, you tracking with any of this?
Yeah, I lost you. You lost me at seafood.
You won't eat any at all?
You don't eat any? None?
You know, once in a while, once in a very great while, like a tuna salad or something like that, you know, but it's got to be, I got to be in the mood.
No shrimp cocktail?
No.
Really?
A giant
shrimp and some nice cocktail sauce.
You see, the thing for me, it all comes down to smell for me, and it just doesn't smell good to me.
Yeah, but what about sushi?
He's not having a cocktail. I know. That's why I'm asking. I don't like it. I don't like it cooked. What makes you think I'm going to eat it raw? Come on now.
It's a whole different kind of smell.
Yes, it is.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Interesting.
You know.
Well, do you grill at all, though?
We have not had a grill for a while yet, because when we moved, we left our grill for the people that bought the house, and then we never really got one.
Mm.
So, I kind of miss it. I mean, all of my neighbors have the wood pellet grills now,
right?
And it does have a unique smell, and it's a really good smell.
Yeah, well, those pellet things are all like smokers.
Yeah,
smokers, but you can also grill on them at the same time. I have one of those, and those are great too. Yeah. Depending on what you cook, but what's your favorite thing on the grill though?
Oh, wow.
Would you eat, of course, you'd have a burger, of course.
Yeah, burger and dogs. I mean, char dogs have always been a big, big fan. I've been a big fan of those. My
pulled
mom,
pork? Pulled pork?
Not as much as just the like a chicken or a beef.
How about pulled chicken?
Pulled chicken, I would, yeah.
Yeah, that's pulled chicken
stuff.
Is good.
Yeah, good stuff.
I've served pulled chicken, and people think it's pulled pork, and I don't tell them any different.
Why bother, right? As long as they're enjoying it.
Because it's just as delicious. Okay.
And you can fix it pretty much the same. Chicken, pulled chicken would exactly be the, pretty the much way. The same as pulled pork.
Roast up the chicken, shred it, put your favorite sauce in, slap it on some buns.
There you go.
And there you have
Call
it.
Call it a day.
There you go.
Mr. Fancy Pants with your grilled tuna.
A char dog does sound great.
Char dogs are so good.
Yep.
So good.
My problem is that I like it all.
Yes. Yeah.
I can't think of anything that I don't like to eat. That's the problem.
Oh, I know. Name it, and I'm right there with you. Yeah. Right. I'll give you a full report next week.
Yeah. If I hear of any big fires that took place in your neighborhood, I'll know what happened. 12:24, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. One of the classic scenes from the original Beetlejuice movie from 1988 with Winona Ryder kind of floating up the wall in this haunted house that has been reactivated by Michael Keaton's Beetlejuice. Michael Keaton is back in the new Beetlejuice movie that opens this coming Friday. Winona Ryder is back, Catherine O'Hara, with lots of new cast members as well. In New York, last week, I sat down one-on-one for our interviews with the cast, and we started off with Winona Ryder talking about what it was like getting back into this character and what the original role meant to her.
Well, I do remember it was life-changing in the sense of the, it was the first time I really identified with a character, and it was the first time I felt super included by a director and a cast. Like, I felt like... whether it was a technique that Tim had of making you feel that way,
I
was 15, but Michael and Catherine and Tim and everyone just made me feel like, well, what do you think? And when you're 15, you're usually just told where to stand, and say your line, and that was like a transformative moment. Like, what do I like? I have a, it, and it, you know, it might have been a technique to just make me feel, you know,
comfortable,
great, or
included, whatever,
but it was, that was a big thing. The movie, I think none of us were prepared for, like, it was very under the radar. Like, I don't think I ever met a person from the studio. Like, we shot it on a soundstage and in Vermont, but honestly, like, it just felt like this super cool, super fun thing. Didn't know how it was gonna, if it was gonna do well. And then I was in high school, and I was in public high school, and I did think that it was really, because it was doing so well, like it would sort of help me, because I wasn't like
be more popular in school.
I wasn't that popular, and it actually made it worse. They thought I was like more of a weirdo, more of a freak.
Wow.
But I do say that. I think it's a badge of honor, you know, now.
So to step back into it then had to be surreal, I would think. Like first days of shooting, first days of being back into
the character. It was honestly... And I know I hear people say this a lot, but I truly have to say it was one of the most special experiences I've ever had. And the entire time, every moment, I was like, this, I have to be completely present. I was very present because this doesn't happen. You know, like this is a once in a lifetime thing, like to reunite with all the, that's, you know, so many years later. There was a lot of terror leading up to it, just in terms of like, I'd never revisited a character before at all. or since, except I guess on Stranger Things. Yeah. But
what do you think the attraction is? I mean, this has become such a classic film. People can recite lines. What do you think the attraction is to all this?
I mean, I think it's just it's completely unique. I mean, there's nothing. You can't compare it to anything. It was its own thing. And obviously, Michael, like that character, which, I mean, he really just created that with Tim. I mean, it didn't, I remember the screenwriter was a friend of mine, and it didn't read necessarily like it played. So just, I think it's sort of what they did and how, it's a mystery, like, in terms of it sort of becoming, I don't think we were expecting it to become what it became, but it's, I think it's wonderful, and to come back to it is just, it is surreal. It's actually emotional,
yeah.
I have to say. Michael, we all got, there were emotions, you know, a lot of emotional, first seeing each other in costume, and
it was so fun to watch it. Yeah. It was like visiting old friends, like high school friends.
Yeah,
there you go. It is Winona Ryder talking about bringing back her role in the new Beetlejuice. She's talking about Michael Keaton, who we will be featuring on our WGN TV morning news this coming Tuesday morning. In a minute, after a news update, Catherine O'Hara talks about being back in the Beetlejuice movie. Coming right up, the great music of the legendary Harry Belafonte, used liberally in the original Beetlejuice movie that came out back in 1988, that starred Michael Keaton as the man, the ghost, who kind of ruled this house of the undead, people who died in the house, who are haunting the house when new residents move into it all. That was the premise of the original movie. And now this movie picks up where that left off, with many of the original characters back again. Michael Keaton returning as Beetlejuice. Catherine O'Hara returning in the movie. Also Winona Ryder returning in the movie, along with newcomer Jenna Ortega, who plays, it's actually kind of generational, because Winona Ryder is the daughter of Catherine O'Hara's character, as she was in the original movie. But now Jenna Ortega is the daughter of Winona Ryder in the movie. So it's these three generations of women who are dealing with the spooky goings-on in this same old house. Same amount of comedy. Director Tim Burton returns to bring you the movie again. And in New York City last week, the week before, I was there to talk with the original actors in the film, including Catherine O'Hara and Jen Ortega. Catherine talking about being true to this character as she brings it all back.
Carrie, I just wanted to do it right.
Yeah.
I wanted to have a right to be there. And do it right and be true to the original character, but show some growth. And it was just so fun.
Is there a certain amount of like electricity when you're all in makeup again and you're
seeing Michael in his Beetlejuice face, you know, between takes, he's talking to himself and going, "Hey, do you believe we're here? We're doing the movie. Isn't this great? You know what you look like right now?" But yes, you're right. Yeah. No, it was really exciting. And Tim, from day one to the last day, never lost his energy or enthusiasm or ideas, or, you know, and also really open to ideas the whole time. He just kept us all really at the highest level of excitement and creativity and fun-loving and playful. And it was great, great set.
And here you come along, not even born yet when this original movie came out. Which is a great thing, by the way.
Yeah, it's good you're alive.
Yeah.
Tim said we had to wait for her to be born to do
right,
this movie.
To do the sequel. What was it like, you know, like joining up and like hopping on this moving train?
What an honor. I mean, I who knew that they were going to bring Beetlejuice back, you know, of all of Tim's movies? Because it was so early on in his career. You know, he was still proving himself at that point. So it was very, very exciting for me. And obviously, I looked up to everybody in this cast and crew and everyone who worked on the first one so much that I think being able to learn from them or play with them and just work with them was like a dream that I didn't realize that I had. You know, it's you just don't know until you're there.
Were you like up on the movie, or did you have to like research going into it?
No, I was up.
Yeah,
I was. I don't know who's not. Everyone.
Yeah. I met somebody yesterday who had only seen the original movie for the first time yesterday.
Really? Because they want to see this one.
Because they wanted to see this one.
People are Yeah, I don't usually freak shame. Consider they're a freak.
Yeah.
Freak shame.
What, Catherine? What do you think the attraction is of this movie? The longevity, the quoting lines. I mean, it really is a classic.
Oh, I'll let you come up with that answer, please. But it's funny. It's sweet. It's dark. It's so light. No. It's inventive. It's creative. In the first movie, it was really this story of a young girl who's feeling out of place in this world.
Yeah.
You know, much like so many of the wonderful characters that Tim has created. And then I know Tim talks about wanting to see where that character is 35 years later. Mm-hmm. And then bringing her daughter, you know, played by Jenna. Such a great idea. You know, you talk about how it's about family. It's about so many things, but it's just, I don't know, it has a lovely... lovely spirit.
It really
to it.
Does.
Yeah.
Is there a little Moira Rose in your character?
Yes, okay. I have one character.
Yeah.
yeah, but I don't think, you know, you talk about these women being secure.
Maybe because I love Moira so much. I see it in everything now.
So fun. Yeah.
But it felt a little.
Oh, no, it is. Yeah. They're both really, both Moira and Delia really want the world to see their talent and appreciate them on so many levels. And all the potential that they've just never had a chance to really show.
So but Moira has artist.
Yeah, but Moira's had some success, whereas Delia, I'm not sure ever really had the success she thinks she deserves.
Yeah.
So she's less secure, I think. But definitely into clothes. But I had to. I'm glad I saw the original movie because it reminded me to speak really quickly because Moira took her time.
Yeah.
And took a lot of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Delia's like dip, 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 dip,
dip. The waddle too.
Yeah, had to walk like.
So maybe silly. That's what it was. Love Moira, all the SCTV. Aww. Oh my God, mind blowing. Love
you. Thank
love
you. So yeah, much. I've been lucky.
Yeah, I love that Catherine O'Hara so much, and her character on the TV, the hit TV series, Schitt's Creek. Moira Rose is an absolute classic, as are the many roles that Catherine O'Hara has given us, both on the SCTV series. And in all of the Christopher Guest movies in which she has co-starred, she is just a scene stealer from day one. During this coming week on the WGN TV Morning News, I'll be playing back these interviews so you can see what they look like while they talk to me. Plus, we'll share my one-on-one interview with Beetlejuice himself, Michael Keaton. That's all coming up this week on the WGN TV Morning News. All right, 12:47. It's Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The award-winning All Things Edible program heard every Sunday. And also we do a little bit of cooking on the WGN TV every Wednesday. Every Wednesday morning at about 9:35, I get behind a grill or... get behind the stove, get behind the oven, share some recipes with you. Judging by your feedback, you seem to be enjoying it. I'm glad that you do. And this coming Wednesday, we're going to be focusing in on the great avocado. It's one of my favorite things to eat. More often than not, if I'm using avocados, I'm just slicing them up and putting them in a salad. Sometimes I'll make a nice guacamole. But I'm looking for your favorite avocado recipes. Recipes that incorporate avocados in some way. We've actually been running a contest on WGN-TV with our sponsor, Avocado from Peru, for favorite avocado contest. We're going to feature the winner of that contest this coming Wednesday. And they've got a special recipe that they're going to share. I'm going to share a recipe that I've done on television once before. 3-4 years ago, somebody asked me if I had a really good recipe for guacamole. And I personally, honestly, did not. But a friend of mine who is originally from Mexico, his name is Lalo, makes the world's greatest guacamole. It is perfect guacamole. And it's simple to make. It's delicious. It's once you have it, it's the only guacamole that you will ever make again. And I wanted to share that with you because it's a super easy, super easy recipe. I can bring it up on the computer here so I don't mess it up. But yeah, here we go. This is my friend Lalo's recipe. Guaranteed, this is how you'll make it from now on. Where you start off with 4 medium-sized avocados. Now, you know, you want them to be ripe, but you don't want them to be overripe. You know, when they're too soft, they're spoiled on the inside, and you have to cut that part out, and it's a mess. You just want to find it so it gives a little bit. You know, not solid like a rock, but that it gives a little bit. And the coloring should be universal. The other ingredients are 1 small onion, some finely chopped cilantro, and some finely chopped tomatoes. Need maybe about 1/4 cup of each, depending on your own taste. The magic ingredient in this dish, what really, really sets it apart, is 1 jalapeno pepper per avocado. So if you're making this dish with the 4 avocados that I'm recommending, 4 jalapeno peppers that you're going to either roast on a grill in direct heat. You can put them on a sheet pan in an oven for about 400 degrees for 7 to 10 minutes until they roast up a little bit. Or you know what? You can actually just even put them right on an open flame on the stovetop. But what you're trying to do is roast them up, wilt them up a little bit. The outside skin of the jalapeno is going to burn. That's okay. Put them in a plastic bag after you get done on the open grill and they're pretty charred up. Put them in a plastic bag, seal it up for about 10 minutes, and the heat is going to sweat those burnt skins right off. So you'll be able to take those right off, okay? And once they cool down, take some of the seeds out. The more seeds that you leave in, the hotter your guacamole is going to be. All right, and so then take your roasted jalapenos and chop them up dice them up to go along with the tomatoes and the cilantro and the onion that you've got. Take the avocados, cut them in half, take the pit out, scoop out the beautiful green avocados on the inside and put them in a bowl with a fork or a potato masher. Mash those avocados up a little bit. And then add 1 tablespoon of whole milk into the avocados. This is key now, okay? 1 tablespoon. And, you know, just see how you like the consistency. It's going to get a little bit creamy. It's going to thin out a little bit. That's okay. You're going to want to do that. And then take that jalapeno mixture that you just roasted up a minute ago and diced up and put that into the avocado mixture as well. And mix that up. Really, really incorporate that beautifully. Add the diced onions. Add the diced tomatoes. Add the chopped up cilantro. It's just a few simple ingredients. And you have the best. I guarantee you that you will say that's the best guacamole that I have ever had. If you like it a little thinner than that, you can add a little more of the whole milk. If you want, you can use a whipping cream in it. I think that makes it a little too thick, but the whole milk is just about perfect. And this guacamole's got just a little bit of a bite. It's got just a nice creaminess to it. And that wonderful avocado flavor is just absolutely perfect in it. So we've got the recipe posted at WGNTV.com/Dean Cooks, WGNTV.com/Dean Cooks. If you want to see it, you can see the video of when I made it. It's got to be 2-3 years ago now since I made it on TV. But I'm going to do it again, as I say, this coming Wednesday on my TV cooking segment, because we're going to be cooking with avocados. Our contest winner, I don't know what the recipe is yet. I have not heard what our contest winner's recipe is yet. But our contest winner is going to do their recipe, and I'm going to do my recipe. And let me see here. We've got some people sending in, excuse my voice here. I don't know what's happened in the last half hour of the show. It's gotten all raspy on me. But here's some recipes that are being texted in from the 815 area code. Somebody is suggesting a bacon avocado cream cheese spread on rustic whole wheat heavily toasted bread. That sounds fantastic. I would assume that you take a full avocado. I would assume that you take probably about, I would guess about 4 ounces of the cream cheese. I wouldn't put a whole big 8-ounce bar in. I think 4 ounces would probably be enough to give it some creaminess. And then chop up some bacon and put that on some rustic whole wheat bread. That sounds absolutely delicious. You know, a lot of people are doing, because it's so high in protein, a lot of people do avocado spreads for their breakfasts now. And I'll do that as well, where I'll just take an avocado, smash it up, put a little salt in it, and then, you know, the everything seasoning that we'll see on a bagel that's got garlic and onion, and it's got all kinds of spices, poppy seeds, got everything in it. That's why it's called everything seasoning. Just sprinkle that on the avocado, smashed avocado, and it's absolutely delicious. So, yeah, that's a good one. Here's somebody texting in a recipe for chocolate avocado pudding. How interesting does that sound? I've never had that. Chocolate avocado pudding. And let me see here. They did send me the recipe, which includes avocados. And, you know, just like I described before, with choosing the avocados, you don't want them hard as a rock. If you get them hard as a rock, put them in a paper bag for a day or so, and they'll begin to ripen and soften up a little bit. But you don't want them too mushy and too soft. That you just want them to give a little bit and to mostly be dark green on the outside. Take some dark chocolate and some cocoa powder, it says, along with a non-dairy milk, almond cashew milk, it says. Sir, I imagine you can use whatever kind of milk that you want, but this particular recipe is going for an almond cashew milk, a touch of vanilla, a touch of topping, And then it says here that it is simply a matter of putting it all, melting the chocolate and putting all the other ingredients then in a food processor and blending it until it's creamy and smooth. So, yeah, I can see the avocado adding a little bit of texture to the dark chocolate, the milk, the vanilla. That sounds like that would be a really wonderful, wonderful flavor. So we'll post all of this. And this coming Wednesday, presumably I'll have a voice again. That's so weird. I don't know what happened to my voice in the last half hour of the show here. But this coming Wednesday, we'll be doing some avocado recipes on my cooking segment on the WGN TV Morning News. All right, so that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be off tomorrow, but we'll be back Tuesday with the WGN TV Morning News, talking one-on-one with Michael Keaton.